mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Lou Milligano. The state of emergency has been declared by Florida Governor Jeb Bush. Tropical Storm Alberta wasn't supposed to be much until it suddenly found strength, and winds now approach hurricane status. 100 miles of low-lying coastal area has been ordered evacuated.
The National Guard has been put on alert today. 7,500 Florida National Guardsmen are on standby, ready to assist in the relief and recovery efforts.
Evacuation orders are posted for people in mobile homes or low-lying areas in at least five coastal counties, stretching more than 100 miles. The concern from Alberta isn't the wind, but the water. Specifically, CBS News hurricane specialist Brian Norcross says it's the storm surge.
Because of the way the sea bottom is there in the Gulf, is the most vulnerable spot in the United States to having high water come ashore, because there's a very shallow shelf there. So that water could pile up 10 or 12 feet when this storm comes ashore early tomorrow.
Ben Roethlisberger was the youngest quarterback to lead a team to the Super Bowl championship when the Steelers won in January. Now the 24-year-old is banged up from a motorcycle crash in Pittsburgh.
According to doctors here at Pittsburgh's Mercy Hospital, Ben Roethlisberger is in serious but stable condition. We're getting a number of other unofficial police reports, however, that say that Ben was smashed up pretty good. He may be suffering facial injuries, a cracked jaw, broken teeth, and smashed up knees.
KDKA reporter Mike Woodley. Family court judge was shot and injured inside a courthouse in Reno today. Police are still searching for the shooter. The FBI is out with its annual crime statistics, and what used to be a monopoly in the big cities has now reversed itself. CBS News national correspondent Dan Ravi says rising crime levels are now being seen in smaller cities and towns. President Bush today held a meeting of the minds, a summit of sorts on Iraq, and left no doubt the coalition will go after the replacement, just as it did for Abu Musab al-Zarqawi.
The successor to Zarqawi is going to be on our list to bring to justice.
And something of a switch in Iraq, says CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer. Nighttime bombings today killed 15.
It's a departure to have bombing at night. For 2 years, most of the bombs have been in the morning. And if it's a new trend, then it's going to be a great blow in this country where temperatures rise to 100 degrees in the daytime and people want to go out in the evening to take the air and maybe do some errands. So everybody's very anxious to see what the rest of the week brings.
Another day, down day on Wall Street. The Dow lost almost 100 points today, closing out the day at 10,792. The Nasdaq was also off, closing out the day at 43. And a barrel of crude was down $1.27 to close at 70.36. This is CBS News.
To add some prestige to the pursuit of driving pleasure, the Michelin Man is attempting to establish a master's degree program in driver's ed. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn why the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series Touring tires is the ultimate study aid for those seeking to graduate to a higher level of driving. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. See LN7806.
The idea is to look at yourself with the eyes of a would-be boss. CBS News correspondent Jim Shinovy.
Looking for a job and worried about your resume? What you should really be worried about is what's on the web. Employers are increasingly checking out prospective employees online.
Google your name, go on your Facebook account, and are you confident that any potential employer would be pleased by what they see.
Brad Karsh of JobBound. One employer checked out a job applicant on Facebook and found that his interests included smoking blunts and obsessive sex.
You could argue that it's not entirely fair because, hey, this is something that students are doing, goofing around with their friends. But the fact of the matter is they need to understand that the Internet is a public vehicle.
Jim Chenevy, CBS News.
There's another one after the VA and the Energy Department and voters in Denver. Now it's the employees of the Georgia Merit System. A spokeswoman saying coding errors made the personal information of 12,000 available on the web. I'm Lou Maligano, CBS News.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck. I'm the guy with a new show on Headline News at 9 Eastern and Pacific after Nancy Grace. Now, why did I get a show? Well, maybe it's because I'm not afraid to say what we're all thinking. First, politicians. You get paid to work, not talk. Start fixing gas prices. Get serious about Iraq, Iran, and immigration. Next, Britney, Paris, Tom, Katie. What kind of idols do our kids have these days? I'm just looking for a little common sense here and there. Watch me, Glenn Beck, every night on Headline News at 9 Eastern and Pacific.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com.
You are listening to the Peter B. Collins Show with a cast of thousands here today. We have a very live audience. We can't call it a studio audience, but we are originating today, tomorrow, and part of Wednesday's program from Washington, D.C. I am here to attend the Take Back America Conference, and there are a lot of people here similarly minded, progressives and people who are interested in seeing real change in our country. And I want to thank the organizers of this event. It's just gotten underway today, and we've had conversations with Barbara Lee, the congresswoman from Oakland, Jan Schakowsky, a very progressive congresswoman from Chicago. We'll be able to bring you that chat with Schakowsky in a day or two because we recorded it. But we are here live, extremely live, in a room that is very noisy, and perhaps we'll quiet down as our three-hour stint gets underway here. Tom Hartman, who is heard on many of the same stations, has been doing triple duty here today. He does win the award as the hardest-working progressive talk show in America. And let me briefly tell you who will be on with us tonight, and then I want to introduce some folks who are here right now. In about a half an hour, Shelley Pingree will join us. She is the president of Common Cause USA. We're going to talk about draining the swamp here, seeing if we can clean up some of the corruption in Washington. And also an initiative that Common Cause has joined forces with many other groups on, which is getting the money out of elections, clean money it's called, and essentially it's taxpayer-financed election activity. Len Rubenstein will be with us. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1999. He's the executive director of Physicians for Human Rights. Also coming up tonight, Sybil Edmonds. It'll be my first opportunity to meet this very powerful woman who blew the whistle on the FBI as they tried to silence her when she exposed some of the problems in intelligence gathering and in translations at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Also, meeting me first time face-to-face tonight, Senator Mike Gravel, who served with distinction from Alaska, and he is promoting a national initiative along with his own candidacy for president in 2008. And Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine, will be with us to complete our program tonight. And we have aligned with Mother Jones for this special remote broadcast from Washington, D.C., and I want to welcome to our Peter B. Collins microphones Angie Coiro, who's been a colleague of mine for many years, served in public radio in San Francisco, and is now the host of the nationally syndicated Mother Jones radio program. Angie, welcome.
We're on the air together at last.
Isn't that nice?
That's very cool. Very cool.
Something we've been scheming at for many years. And let me turn your microphone up just a little bit.
They put me in charge,
which is very dangerous when it gets into technology and stuff. What do you think of this gathering, Angie?
This has actually been very impressive. Very impressive. Now, I did note on Radio Row that I'm one of two women so far.
Yeah.
So all of my hopes have not been realized. an awful lot of white guys behind the mic, no offense.
Aside from that,
the panels seem really good. It seems surprisingly well organized. I guess anytime a convention's organized, it surprises me.
Well, especially progressives and Democrats.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
that's right.
Get
out the committee about everything.
You're right. Well, sitting across from us is investigative reporter Robert Dreyfus, the author of Devil's Game. Bob, it's nice to meet you face to face. We talked about your book a couple of months ago.
Yeah, thank you. You too. And lucky thing on radio, nobody can tell you're white, so I can be almost anything to anybody right now.
Yeah. Well, welcome to our program. And you have a powerful new piece, which is kind of, at least the headline, is reminiscent of an old Leonard Cohen song. It says, "Next we take Tehran." And it's the confrontation with Iran has very little to do with nukes and a lot with the agenda of empire. And Bob Dreyfus, I took note this morning in the Washington Post that the framers of this new American century, the folks who ran PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, apparently are getting ready to close the doors of that think tank. So early in the century, before all the work is done?
Well, I guess they figure it's mission accomplished already and they can take on other more bold projects, but I really that was never really a serious think tank. That was just a little ad hoc group that was put together in the 1990s and brought together a lot of the people who, once they went into the Bush administration, didn't need a think tank anymore. They were now called the government.
But what about in terms of the blueprint that they're credited with having created that we're following now? Are they overcredited with that?
No, I mean I think they created the blueprint and then they decided to implement it by becoming the government and implementing themselves. Most think tanks don't do that. They write blueprints and then they hope that somebody in power pays attention to them. And in this case, they decided, well, it's better for us to become the government. So pretty much everybody who signed that is either serving as U.S. ambassador to Iraq now or as Secretary of Defense or some other job, so they didn't really need to exist as a think tank anymore. They've accomplished what they set out to do, which is to become the U.S. government.
And why do you think they left what is somewhat incriminating information up on their website for so long, particularly the phrase about the new Pearl Harbor that would be required to galvanize the American public to accept this incredible foreign policy shift? That's a phrase that has really lingered with a lot of people on the left.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there are still some people who believe in conspiracy theories that 9/11 was staged by evildoers on the American side, or that, alternatively, that the Bush administration somehow knew that 9/11 was going to happen and then let it happen. I mean, I think people who believe that are like the flying saucer conspiracies. It's stupid to believe those kind of conspiracies. On the other hand, they certainly took advantage of the fact that 9/11 took place in order to advance an agenda for global domination. And I guess it's too much for some people to think that this could be somehow a coincidence, and therefore they have to see in it some sort of dark conspiracy.
Well, I'm not a conspiracy theory kind of guy, but there are so many lingering questions about 9/11, about why Building 7 came down, about why they haven't shown us real photographs of a real plane going into the Pentagon.
Well,
they're substantial questions.
No, they're not substantial questions. There were many people in Washington who saw the plane flying into the Pentagon, so there's nothing lingering about that. And by the way, for the silly people who think that it was a missile that hit the Pentagon, what do they think happened to the airplane with all those actual people on it? Did it vanish in the Atlantic Ocean? I mean, so...
But
I'm not here to talk about conspiracy theories, Bob.
I cannot explain what happened to a plane that did not fly into the Pentagon. What I can tell you is that the hole in the side of the building wasn't big enough for a 757 to go in, be swallowed up, and to vaporize, as they want us to believe.
Well, I think that's utter nonsense. I'm sorry. It's utter nonsense. It's been thoroughly investigated. People saw the plane hit the Pentagon. The people who were on that plane died at the Pentagon. We should move beyond the conspiracy theories and start to think about the fact that we now have an administration in this country that is pursuing a policy of global empire in an aggressive way, far beyond the way it has been pursued since the 1970s or 60s.
Now, I certainly agree with that. I just don't want to dismiss the questions. Angie?
Yeah, I do have to say, though, that the right wing can play both sides of this equation. They can tell people who have legitimate questions or don't have proper information yet, they can dismiss these things as conspiracy theories, dismiss any sort of questioning as hysterical. And it's not just with 9/11. There are stances that are taken by people who have questions or have protests, and they're immediately labeled as unpatriotic or, in some cases, you know, conspiracy theorists. And that way they manage to minimize both the person who's asking the question and anyone else who might rise up to take their place or have a more legitimate question. So I do have to say there are wild conspiracies out there. Many of them are unfounded. Some of them deserve questioning, but we can't take our eyes off the fact that there are bigger issues to look at. We're still discouraged from doing that, and it serves the right wing for us to get lost, as you were saying, to get lost in the conspiracy theories and not look at what's really happening. In your article, you go into what's really happening, for example, in the Middle East, a very, you know, clinical view of that, and it's that level of education we need to be putting our energy into. Well,
that's Angie Coiro. I'm Peter B. Collins. Robert Dreyfuss is with us here. Go ahead, Bob.
I think the issue is, this came up with the question that was asked, Helen Thomas asked President Bush, if it wasn't about the weapons of mass destruction, if it wasn't about terrorism and Al-Qaeda ties to Saddam Hussein, why did we invade Iraq? And I think that's the big $64 billion question plus that isn't being asked by most of the media. My answer to it is that it's primarily, not only, but primarily to do with the strategic value of the oil in that part of the world. And do you agree
with Greg Palast's implication in his recent book that the idea was to keep that oil in the ground in Iraq so the rest of the world oil supply is worth that more to the transnational companies?
I don't think they're trying to keep the oil in the ground. I think it's more a long-term question of who gets to control the spigot, who gets to boss around the oil wells that stretch from Central Asia into the Persian Gulf. There are lots of people who want to get their hands on the oil and pump it out of the ground, and I think keeping the oil in the ground is pretty much impossible because, especially with prices at $75, if you can pump oil out of the ground, you're making three or four times what you were making just a few years ago. So I think they didn't even expect prices to go where they are now. What they did expect was that there would be a global struggle between the United States and China and Russia over who gets to control that part of the world.
Well, and the biggest impact on American retail gasoline prices is their stranglehold on refining capacity. It's not directly related to a shortage of crude or even the price of crude right now.
Yeah, there are many, many factors that go into why we're paying these painful prices at the pump. But again, I guess my point is that the invasion of Iraq isn't related to the specific question of whether prices go up or down, but to a long-term 10, 15, 20-year perspective about where the United States sees a zero-sum game, that if we can control Central Asia, if we can control the Persian Gulf, then China can't, then we have a strategic card to play against China, against Russia, and against other global rivals. The whole point of the Project for a New American Century, of Paul Wolfowitz's doctrine about military supremacy, is we cannot allow any country or combination of countries to rival America's power again.
We're going to pick up in a minute with Bob Dreyfuss. He's the author of the new book, Devil's Game. Angie Coiro is my co-host here. We're live from Washington, D.C., and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, you risk exciting me. Once and journey, someone said nine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I'll hold back.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the Concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years.
and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're originating live from Washington, D.C., the Take Back America Conference. My co-host Angie Coiro from Mother Jones Radio is here. And Robert Dreyfus, investigative reporter for Mother Jones, is sitting with us right now. And Bob, tell us a little bit about the article that is in the new Mother Jones, where you offer a comparison of the road that took us into Iraq and the road Bush is leading us on now, which appears to be headed toward Iran.
Yeah, I was really struck because the Russian foreign minister, of all people, up at the United Nations when he was visiting said, it looks so deja vu, and that's exactly right. I mean, every single aspect of what's happening vis-a-vis Iran right now, we went through with Iraq. And I think that's part of the reason why the rest of the world is looking at this and kind of scratching their heads and saying, can we trust these guys? Because they went last time they brought us to the UN in 2002, and they asked us to pass resolutions and send inspections and worry about this and that. And then finally, after a few months, Bush threw up his hands and he said, that's it. I'm sick of the UN. It doesn't work. It's not getting us what we want. Get those inspectors out of there. And the bombing begins in 5 minutes. Well, that was the Bush plan for Iraq. And if you look at Iran now, you see a lot of the same things happening outside the UN as well. They're creating special units at the State Department and the Pentagon to worry about Iran. They're charging that Iran has ties to al-Qaeda. They're threatening. I mean, there's a whole series, you know, sanctions. Everything that we did vis-a-vis Iran, we're doing, we had done already vis-a-vis Iraq. So I think we at least have to worry that this current initiative that the Bush administration has to have a dialogue with Iran to make an offer will collapse at some point in the near to midterm future, at which point Bush will say, well, we can't get the Russians and the Chinese and the Europeans to go along with us, so we're going to have to put together a coalition of the willing. Now, it may be a lot harder to find those willing to join this time. But on the other hand, we're not really talking about invading Iran. That's maybe the one difference. We're talking about a high-tech bombing campaign that would probably last weeks, that would have, obviously, incalculable consequences. It could do everything from double or triple the current price of oil to lead to a catastrophic escalation in Iraq. I mean, there's a whole series of consequences that could follow from an attack on Iran that can't be predicted. But I'm sure that people in the Bush administration are at least toying with that's the kind of gamble we need to start thinking about.
You know, it's almost a cliche to decry the media coverage of Iraq, but my question to you is, this is not new in your writing. You've covered before the parallels that are happening. There's a lot of new information that's worth reading in the article. My question to you is, why are these parallels not being noted more widely? And even here at a media conference that ideally is discussing the big topics in the world, as you pointed out to me, there's not even a panel on Iraq. Why this apparent indifference on so much of the media?
Well, those are really two different questions. As far as the conference here and other things, I mean, the Democratic Party is divided over both Iraq and Iran and foreign policy in general. So you don't have the Democratic Party coming together in some unified way opposing the Bush administration over either Iraq or Iran. So that's a problem that the grassroots have to deal with, because I believe that the American people are far, far past where the Democratic Party is, and even where the Republican Party is. The Republicans themselves are starting to raise a lot of questions about what's happening in Iraq and the need to start thinking about getting out. As far as Iran goes, I think there was a brief period, maybe a month ago, of beginning to be a kind of panicky feeling, even in the mainstream media. And then, when they settled down to make this offer to Iran, people kind of relaxed and said, okay, we're off the hook for at least the next few months. Maybe we can breathe easier. So the kind of alarm that was created when Cy Hirsch wrote his piece in The New Yorker in the spring has somewhat dissipated. And I think that's a mistake, because the same people, the same hawks, are still mostly in place in the Bush administration. And they're like bulldogs. They don't give up of this bad idea. They want to go ahead.
And did you note the language that Secretary Rice used when she opened the door to bilateral talks with conditions? In her first page, the first page of text, there were seven references to the leaders in Tehran. Two of them used the word government. The other five were the word regime. And I think Americans have become trained now that when we hear a regime, well, the next step is regime change. And do you think that this is simply a pretextual PR offensive to be able to say, well, we tried to work with the Iranians, and now we have no choice but to use military force?
No, I totally agree with you. And the funny thing about it, though, is just as in another parallel with Iraq, is going into the attack on Iraq, we had no idea what was going to come next. Or maybe we thought it was going to be Shalabi and he would wrap up Iraq like a present with a little bow on top. With Iran, the Bush administration has no clue about what the regime would look like after regime change to what?
Yeah.
Who's going to take it? The Shah? The military? Nobody knows. So it's like regime change, push Iran off a cliff. It breaks up into a million pieces, and then what? It's like Humpty Dumpty. We couldn't put the poor egg back together in Baghdad, and we're not going to do it in Tehran either.
And do we have a Chalabi in Iran?
Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, not really, but there's like a whole complex host of potential Iranian rulers who are in the mix right now.
Robert Dreyfus, read his new article in the current issue of Mother Jones Magazine. I'll return with Angie Coiro in a moment with Shelley Pingree, the president of Common Cause USA. We're originating live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America conference here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Tom Hartman.
When Thomas Jefferson wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness into the Declaration of Independence in 1776, it was the first time in the history of the world that the word happiness had been used in the founding document of any so-called civilized nation.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
And Ronald Reagan was the guy who began to take it apart. He was the perfect frontman for really what was fundamentally a vicious idea.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Peter B. Collins Show live from Washington, D.C. We're at a Hilton Hotel here in the sub-basement with thousands of people attending the Take Back America conference. There was an unscheduled rainstorm earlier today, but it's cleared up here, and it's kind of comfortable. You got the humidity turned down for me, Chelly.
Yeah, I know. It's usually too hot here.
Thank you so much.
Well done. Well
Angie
done.
Coiro is my co-host for this hour as we originate from Washington, and it's nice to see the smiling face of Chelly Pingree across the table from us. I always enjoy talking with the president of Common Cause USA, doing a lot of good work, and thank you for joining us here today.
Well, thank you. It's fun to be doing it live. Usually we're on the phone and
right.
great distance, so
yeah.
It's fun to be in person together.
Yeah. I'm going to turn you up a little bit. It's not quite loud enough there. Chelly Pingree, talk a little bit first about money in politics and the corrupting influence of campaign contributions. We've seen Tom DeLay resign, at least in my view, it was in disgrace. He doesn't accept that yet. But he was bragging about the K Street Project, about selling legislation to the highest corporate donor. And there are many of us across the country who are deeply offended by this. We want to see it cleaned up. And one way to do it is to get the special interest money out of our campaigns.
Yeah, and it does seem like we have a window of opportunity here. You know, unfortunately, watching all these scandals has made Americans across the country think even more about the fact that our politicians are increasingly bought and sold, and that it is, you know, even if you're a good person in the system, it's all about how much money you can raise, all about the influence of the special interests and whether or not, you know, you've done the things you promised you would do when you took the money. And then, frankly, just even for a person who doesn't want to be influenced by the money to run for office today, you have to raise so much.
Yeah.
All of what you do is spend your time raising money. So we're promoting clean elections, publicly financed elections like they have in my home state of Maine, Arizona, Connecticut just passed a law.
We've got a bill in California.
We've got a bill in California that's already come through the House. That's very exciting. And you may have a ballot initiative as well. So things are moving there. We've been doing focus groups and polling. And what's interesting is even over 2 years ago, the American public is even more aware of how much money is influencing the process. And I think Congress is starting to wake up a little. I think there's going to be a bill in the Senate. There's already one in the House. And we're doing a campaign this summer asking citizens to go and talk to candidates and incumbents and say, will you support clean elections? Will you take the pledge?
Can we talk a little bit about how we frame this? Because it's interesting to me you say people are becoming more aware.
Right.
I find it discouraging that we have, not in all cases, but to a big percentage point, an uneducated populace about how the political system works. And I'm afraid that it's easy to sell to them. When you say, for example, publicly financed campaigns, they think higher taxes. They think more money out of my pocket. The idea of how the money comes into the system and how intricately it's used and abused, a lot of people just aren't grasping it. So part of the role here is education, is it not?
Well, and the rubber hits the road in a campaign. You watch if you have a campaign in California this year, and we'll be helping out there if there is a campaign on clean money. And the public will understand. The one thing I will say is I think you can put together a focus group, a group of people anywhere, and you say, why do you think drug prices are so high? And they'll say the politicians are bought and sold by the pharmaceutical industry. You say, why are gas prices so high? They'll say, backroom deals in Washington. I mean, that part I think people really understand. It does get complicated when you start to say, so we have a different way of doing it. And here's what we see happen in a focus group. The first thing people will say is, well, that's a good idea, but you can never change these politicians. They get to Washington and they all go bad. And then the second thing, you're right, is special interests will come into a campaign like California or somewhere else and say all those things. Oh, it's too expensive. It's welfare for politicians. But what we're telling people is it's just $6. $6 per American will have publicly financed campaigns for all of Congress. And what we say is, do you want to pay now or pay later? Because just look at earmarks. Billions of dollars spent every year to pay back the special interest to pay for the campaigns. You can save a lot of money right there.
Well, and I was floored over the weekend to learn about the revolving door at the Appropriations Committee. And here's this guy, a friend of Jerry Lewis and Bill Lowry, who served as a staffer before Lewis became chairman, left to go to the lobbying firm,
got a multi-million dollar severance package to leave the lobbying firm and come back to his job at the Appropriations Committee. I thought they were supposed to wait at least a year for the door to revolve.
Well, one, we haven't had a functioning ethics committee, so there hasn't been a real enforcement of the revolving door. And two, we tried to get Congress to pass stricter revolving door rules this year to go to 2 years, to say you couldn't just go work in a lobbying firm and direct it from behind the scenes, right, to have it affect staff. And Congress isn't going to pass any kind of ethics legislation this year. You know, this has become the status quo. People come to Congress, about 50% of Congress goes to work as a lobbyist after they're done, and people have started to see it as sort of your just reward, your return on your investment.
Yeah.
That is no way to be thinking about public service. They're paid $160,000 a year. It's not as if you're going broke while you're here.
The lobby system is so entrenched now, I can understand why people think you can't change it. Is there a matter of a phase in? What's the way to be effective about making change? You can't just say, as of tomorrow, you know, this is all over. What kind of phase in are we talking about for good change?
Well, you know, we proposed a big series of reforms to Congress this year. And I have to say, you know, different members of Congress have submitted amendments, but the current majority does not want to pass anything that would change. We've suggested that lobbyists should not be able to hold fundraisers. You know, there were 79 members of Congress who had a lobbyist as the treasurer on their campaign.
Wow.
Much less the events that they have. We say that lobbyists shouldn't be able to give contributions. I mean, you have to start doing some of these things, and then eventually you have to have a system of some sort of public financing so members of Congress aren't so dependent. To run for the United States Senate today, you've got to raise $13,000 every day. Every day. That means what you do is you do a little bit of work for the public, and the rest of the time you're on the phone calling contributors or going to events. They don't like it anymore either.
Shelley Pingree is with us, president of Common Cause USA. Go to the Common Cause website at commoncause.org, and that's where you can get more information about the Clean Money campaign. And you're asking Americans coast to coast to hold house parties and screen a new documentary. Tell us about it.
We are on June 27th. It's the story of what happened with Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff and some of the scandals, and it helps people to understand really how these things are tied. We think that it takes a balanced point of view. You know, both parties are implicit in this, and people have to understand we got to change the whole system. And then we're asking them to have their friends and neighbors in. We'll have a little conversation about it, and we want to get them to go out and ask their members of Congress and the challengers to take the pledge. I think it'll be a fun night on the 27th. We'd love to have people just hold an informal house party. I think it will get everybody all juiced up and ready to go, and this will be a very different campaign if Americans are standing up and asking the right questions.
Yeah.
Do you have experience with the house parties in terms of, it's common for us to all preach to the choir and invite our friends who all feel the same way already. Do you have any experience with reaching out to people who are kind of across the aisle on this discussion about how to maybe bring them into this conversation?
Well, Common Cause actually is fortunate. We're nonpartisan, and we work on both sides of the aisle. So we have a lot of members who are both parties. We have an increasing number of members who are in no party, you know, libertarians, people who just don't believe in the process anymore and want to see it change. And we're trying to form a coalition with a wide variety of groups, from the faith community, where we're finding Republican former members of Congress who are very concerned about what we're doing, the League of Women Voters, which represents, you know, everybody's mother, grandmother, and daughter. So I think we're going to get a very broad-based group of people who are ready to stand up and start talking about this.
And, you know, we're here at a progressive gathering, a lot of Democrats here, and people are supposed to kind of stay on message and be politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't. I am so...
I was going to say, you were waiting for the other shoe to drop, weren't you?
I mean, I'm so offended by the case of Congressman Jefferson. And I understand about, innocent until proven guilty, and I'm very happy to give him due process. But the facts that have been leaked or presented so far indicate that he's knee-deep in something that appears to be highly unethical.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to refuse to step aside, and for the Black Caucus to back him, really trumping their vested interest over the national interest, is deeply troubling to me. And it also sends a message that many people across the country receive that, oh, they're all corrupt, they're all on the take. What difference does it make?
Well, I think that's one of the sad things. I think the Democrats have felt like they were going to capture this issue and they were the party that was going to look crystal clean and the other party wasn't. And from the Common Cause perspective, unfortunately, we've been saying for a long time both parties are part of the problem. The Democrats and Republicans had a seven-year truce on the Ethics Committee. They both agreed not to file complaints on each other. That's part of how a lot of these things happen. Nobody's had anybody, you know, watching. It's no one's been keeping an eye on it. There's been no enforcement. We might not have had the problems that we've been experiencing, the travel, the, you know, many of these things were against the law, or against the rules already. So I agree. I think people stand back and they just say a pox on both their houses. And unfortunately, it reinforces this notion that you can't trust democracy anymore.
Well, there's the problem is that you have, it's not that the Democrats are different than the Republicans in raising money every way they can. It's just that they're not as good at it. Republicans do it better.
Well, and this has been one-party control in Washington. I mean, that is part of what happened, is you had Jack Abramoff, who became very powerful. He did direct most of his finances to the Republicans.
But because they had the juice.
Exactly, and they were, you know, people tend to give to the majority party. But the fact is, when the Democrats were in control, there were many of the same kinds of ethical violations, and everybody is now in this chase for money, which means that, you know, you get these bills before Congress, net neutrality, energy policy, prescription drugs, and a lot of people who should be on a progressive ticket say, ah, well, I got to throw one to the people who brought me here. And before you know it, you can't get the votes.
Mm-hmm. And it really, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started with clean money and moved into corruption, because they're inextricably linked. If we took the pressure off of the fundraising requirements for these people to hold on to their offices and to contribute to the kitty, you know, the Democratic and Republican campaign committees, that's how they buy into chairmanships and, you know, move up the ladder. Well, if we can eliminate, you know, the whole need to raise all that money, then we can withdraw the pressure that leads them in these directions.
No, I agree. You know, I come from the state of Maine, where we have publicly financed elections. And this year, 90% of the legislative candidates will use the system, Republicans and Democrats, because once people figured it out, that they didn't have to go out and raise money, and that they could sit on a committee and make a decision based on what was good, they've really bought in. The public loves it. My daughter's a state legislator. She runs under the system. And Maine passed the first really good universal access to health care, the Durham plan, once the legislature was in session under this clean election system. So
and
I think it has an
Senator
effect.
Pingree have something to do with that?
Well, I've been a strong supporter and a big believer, so absolutely.
Are we not in a position, though, of, I believe people are married to the game. There are people who are married to the game. One of the things I'm cynical about is being able to drop legislation that is loophole-free.
Mm-hmm.
That you're going to find
someone who isn't
motivated enough to not only take the advantage of the public money and somehow work behind the scene to squeeze more money in the back door.
It's true. And actually, I would say one step before that, which is really difficult, is it's very hard to get Congress or a state legislature to change the laws that got them elected. We just passed this bill in the state of Connecticut, but it took a two-year campaign of incredible citizen action, you know, full-page ads in the newspaper, blasting the politicians, encouraging them to vote for it. There was a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, and we kind of had a system where they were playing off each other. And they were the first legislature in the country to pass public financing. Every other place where it's been implemented, it's been a referendum, because the politicians don't want to change the system either. And it's very hard to do.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Shelley Pingree from Common Cause USA. If you have a question or comment, join us right now. On the Central Coast, it's a local call at 831-899-5792. And toll free, you can call me from anywhere in the continental U.S. at 1-888-579-2540. That's 888-579-2540. With my co-host, Angie Coiro, from Washington, D.C., I'm Peter B. Collins.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, originating live from Washington, D.C., and the Take Back America Conference. My co-host, Angie Coiro from Mother Jones Magazine. Mother Jones Radio is with us. And by the way, when Bob Dreyfus was with us earlier, I just wanted to let you know we were discussing an article that's in the next issue of Mother Jones. It hadn't arrived at my mailbox yet either.
But it is just off the presses.
You'll be seeing it very soon.
Came in time for the Take Back America Conference.
Great. And with us is Chelly Pingree, president of Common Cause USA. Chelly, before the break, we were talking about clean elections, about the corrupting influence of the big money chase, and that it affects both parties. One of the other issues that we're seeing is the power of incumbents. We had some pretty interesting congressional primary races in California, but neither Republican nor Democratic challengers had a chance. The highest vote tally for a challenger was Marcy Winograd, who I believe got 37 or 38%. Not bad, but the entrenched benefits to an incumbent, and it's not just the franking privilege. It's the fact that they've built name recognition. They have access to easy money, the PAC money, the party money. And whenever they're challenged, hey, they just write checks, they throw the TV ads on, and it often buries a challenger. How do we fix this?
Well, you're right. It's a complicated problem, and certain things are justified and appropriate when you're an incumbent. You know, you spend time in your district, people get to know you, and if you're doing a good job, you have every right to stay there. But I think there are a variety of problems that enter into this. One is clearly what you mentioned, the influence of money in the political process. Much easier to raise money. People like to give money to the incumbents, and that's who special interests, you know, tend to send their money to. Redistricting, an issue you've talked about in California, doesn't affect the primaries as much, but it certainly has affected politics in our country. 98% of incumbents get reelected. In California in the last election, no incumbent lost their seat and no seat changed party, because they're usually designed to protect those very people who are in office, and they're often colluded from Republicans and Democratic incumbents who say, I'll save your seat, you save mine. And the last thing really is the media. I mean, how often does the media dig in and talk about the real issues? When you look at studies that universities do around the coverage of elections, especially at the congressional and local level, it just doesn't amount to much, and usually what is done is about the horse race. Who raised more money? Was there a scandal? Rarely about their clear differences in issues or the actual problems that they would face once they're in elected office. It's almost impossible as a challenger to really get your message out there unless you can buy it
And as we know, that tends to be a 15 or 30 second soundbite that really doesn't tell the voter that much.
I can understand the media's effort to sift through what they would call a serious from a non-serious candidate, but inevitably they end up crowning the candidate legitimate or illegitimate. In their effort to be editorially sane and responsible, instead, they're the ones who give the blessing. You will get coverage. You
yes.
will not get coverage.
No, that often happens. And frankly, even before an endorsement, most of the time, they just don't give much coverage. You know, newsrooms have shrunk tremendously now. There's not much staff at a newspaper or, you know, local radio station that really gets out there and covers these things. So there's no information. I'm a believer that in a democracy, people will make good decisions if they have the right information. They rarely get enough information.
So on redistricting, there was a measure in California last year, and it got lost in the Arnold referenda
right.
batch. The whole bath was thrown out and the bath water. Are you trying to retool to get a redistricting measure on the ballot in California?
Yeah, our California chapter has been doing a lot of work, again, with a broad coalition of organizations, good government, civil rights organizations, you know, the kind of groups that have been talking about this for a very long time, and hoping that something will go through the legislature. You know, a lot of people who opposed the last measure, which wasn't perfect, said, oh, we'll bring it back to the legislature, and we promise we'll do it. The governor still has an interest in it, so I think it has some potential. Most people understand that you want to have a system where voters choose their members of the legislature, not the reverse.
Although for the people who are trying to protect what they have, I mean, again, that falls on both sides of the aisle. And I recall actually someone that I interviewed on Mother Jones Radio, who I won't name, but I said, you know, what if your run as a progressive does not unseat the incumbent? Are you worried that at that point, we throw it over to the Republicans? And she said, oh, no, and was very comfortable saying, no, we've got this locked up. The way this district is put together, we've got it locked up. So I think as soon as you talk about reforming that, it's all going to depend on whose ox is being gored, whether you're going to be able to get support.
Oh, absolutely. It's always the minority party that wants to change the system of redistricting. But again, we say if they go to a fair system, you have an outside the legislature panel that, you know, looks at the criteria and competition and, you know, the kinds of communities you want to put together, not just sort of funny district boundaries to protect one person. I can believe in the end, you know, people will make the right choices, they'll vote in the right people, and you'll get a good legislature.
Shelley Pingree, there is an erosion of confidence in our electoral process, in voting machines, in the honesty of tabulations. And this is an issue that has, very deep concern among my listeners. And, for example, in the contested race to replace Duke Cunningham, the Busby-Bilbray race, there are significant issues there about votes that were not counted on election night. There was a report of 68,000 ballots that were uncounted, not all congressional ballots, but in the county. And the margin was only 4,700.
Right.
And so this leads to two issues. One is we think that elections have been stolen, but we can't prove it. And that even just the thought undermines confidence in the system. And secondly, there are people who have just checked out because they figure, well, if the election's going to be stolen, why should I bother?
No, you're right. You know, we can argue all day about the technical questions around electronic voting machines, and we believe that there should be a paper trail, and we believe we should pass a bill in Congress requiring it, as many states have already done. But I think you get to the bigger point here. Americans increasingly are saying we don't trust our elections anymore, and then they say, why should I bother to vote? So then what you have is this problem of not enough people showing up at the polls. And, you know, we really aren't getting the voice of America here. We're getting people who don't believe in the system checking out.
28% turnout in the California primary.
Wow. Yeah, that's just not a reflection of who we are necessarily anymore.
I believe there are folks in power who work very hard to disenfranchise the American public. It's to their benefit.
Oh, absolutely.
To discourage us from voting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and it forces you to think about it. These are radical ideas, but there are countries where there's mandatory voting. There are countries where there is Saturday voting or much more convenient voting. I mean, we got to think about who we are as a country today, and assuming that everybody can get time off work, get to the polling place, that there'll be a machine for them when they get there, and that they even know how to use the system anymore, doesn't necessarily reflect what America looks like today.
What else are you working on at Common Cause? We have about a minute remaining.
I think the only other issue we haven't gotten to is this question about net neutrality and a little bit about free and open access to the Internet. We've been very interested in ownership rules at the FCC and many of the things to keep access to the media out there for us, but it's increasingly being part of the question is, will the Internet be free in the future? And Congress is voting on it almost as we speak, and there's a lot of telecom companies who don't want to see you get the access to the Internet that you have today, and that's a big concern for us.
And we've already lost in the House on that.
We did.
We need to move in the Senate.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of confusing propaganda out there about what net neutrality really means and whether it's reasonable to play it out along the model of the cable television business plan.
Right.
And so there's just a lot of noise, particularly in the newspapers here in Washington.
And you couldn't
right
have
now
a worse term, net neutrality, you know? I mean, it's hard. It sounds wonky and geeky, but everybody knows they want to make sure everything comes over the Internet at a high speed in the future. It's going to be how we get information. It's going to be very critical.
And we need equality there.
Exactly.
Shelley, thanks for fighting for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for doing what you do and having me on the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
Shelley Pingree, president of Common Cause USA. Coming up next, Nobel Prize winner Leonard Rubenstein will join us. And also next hour, Sabelle Edmonds, the FBI whistleblower. I just got to meet her in person. That's a personal thrill for me. Live from Washington, D.C., with my co-host Angie Coiro. Thanks, Angie.
Let's do it
I'm
again.
Peter B. Collins.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Alberto is almost a hurricane.
Mandatory evacuation orders are up across much of the Florida Gulf Coast.
A new most wanted in Iraq.
The successor to Zarqawi is going to be on our list to bring to justice.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Just like last year, the hurricane season is off to a fast start with a storm now approaching western Florida. CBS News correspondent Jim Acosta is there.
Hurricane-weary Floridians would like to have dismissed Alberto as just another tropical storm, but tonight it's exceeding expectations. Its winds jumped from 50 to 70 miles per hour in just 3 hours this morning to near hurricane strength. That was all Florida officials needed to see to issue a mandatory evacuation order across 100 miles of the state's Gulf Coast.
If you're ordered to evacuate, you really should do it. Don't think that you can ride out a storm. It's not worth losing one's life.
The first named storm of the season is projected to make landfall tomorrow afternoon somewhere near Cedar Key, a tiny island village that's prone to flooding.
Forecasters predict 10 inches of rain and a storm surge up to 10 feet. Alberto has ended a long drought in Florida. It's helping to put out wildfires. Now this.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore, erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
To increase driving pleasure for all motorists, the Michelin Man is on a door-to-door quest to collect signatures for a petition to build an American Autobahn. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn how the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series touring tires can give you the confidence to achieve driving bliss on any road you travel. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
A roadside bomb that killed an American soldier was just one of a series of insurgent attacks today. More than 50 Iraqis died, including 21 killed by car bombs. U.S. forces seem to be exploiting the intelligence gathered at Abu Musab al-Zarqawi's hideouts. In the past 48 hours, officials say there have been 140 major operations with 32 insurgents killed and one high-value target captured. But al-Qaeda in Iraq today announced a Zarqawi successor, giving his name as Abu Hamza al-Muhajir, saying he has a history in jihad. Top-level meetings on the future in Iraq convened today at Camp David. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer is covering.
President Bush hopes this two-day review will somehow buy time with a public that polls indicate is increasingly impatient with the Iraq war.
We were going to make sure that we fully understand the Iraqi capability to be able to take the fight to the enemy and secure its country.
The president warns the man chosen to succeed terror leader al-Zarqawi will be brought to justice. But Mr. Bush was unable to say when the emerging Iraqi government would be able to take on the insurgents on its own. He hopes to get a further assessment during a teleconference with the new Iraqi leadership tomorrow. Peter Mayer, CBS News, near Camp David.
I'm Dan Raviv, live in Washington. Can the president win more public support in these days after Zarqawi was killed?
What has been reality for the Bush administration has been the American people are simply not happy with the Iraqi war.
A pollster, Professor Ken Warren in St. Louis, and Senate Democrat Joe Biden tells CBS News.
They're looking for results on the ground. They'll make their judgment finally and forever within the next several months as to whether or not progress is able to be made or not.
That's Joe Biden, live in Washington. Dan Raviv, CBS News.
He's just 24. He's a Super Bowl hero.
Roethlisberger throws. Touchdown!
But the football career of Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger is in jeopardy. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr tells us what happened.
Blood. He looked conscious.
Another witness who didn't want to be identified said Roethlisberger was not wearing a helmet when he hit the windshield and then tumbled across the hood of the car.
I said, baby, what's your name? What's your name? He said, Ben.
Roethlisberger, with obvious head injuries, tried to stand up, then collapsed before being taken to a hospital for emergency surgery.
He's in serious but stable condition with a broken jaw and nose after running into a car on his motorcycle. Roethlisberger's coach and others had warned him to stop riding without a helmet, but that is not prohibited by his contract with the Steelers. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Aflac for small business. How can I help you?
Yeah, you cover small business?
Yes, we do.
Great, because I'm an ant.
Okay.
I got a tunneling business. You dig?
How many employees?
Well, it's a family-run business. Just me and my aunts.
Well, with Aflac for small business, you can enjoy a lot of the benefits of a big business.
Great.
Just call 1-800-99-AFLAC.
Did that.
Or go to aflacsb.com. Aflac for small business. Because small business needs...
Aflac!
Too.
Gotta run. Company picnic.
American Family Life Insurance Company of Columbus. Aflac.
You trust your car to take you places this summer. So who do you trust to take care of your car? Sears Auto Centers. Full-service car care, bumper to bumper. From diehard batteries to all the top tire brands, even on Sundays. All backed with a national guarantee of satisfaction. And right now it's our biggest Michelin tire sale of the year, with Michelin tires at the lowest prices of the season. You're going places this summer. Make sure your car is going to the place that protects it best. Sears Auto Centers. See store for guarantee details. Exclusions apply. See LN7806.
From deep inside the Beltway, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, originating live from Washington, D.C., in a conference called the Take Back America Conference. 3 days, a lot of great speakers here. Tomorrow, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton will lead off, followed by Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the House, the Democrats' leader in the House. And we're going to talk with Congressman John Conyers tomorrow, and we have invitations out to many other elected leaders that we hope to be able to hook up behind our microphones here. Coming up later this hour, Sybelle Edmonds, to my mind, a great American who blew the whistle on the misdeeds she saw when she was working as a translator at the FBI. And it's my first chance to meet her in person, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this microphone with her. Joining us now is Leonard Rubenstein. He is the Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights, and they won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1999. Len, welcome to our program today.
I'm delighted to be here.
There is no shortage of situations that you need to focus on in the world today.
That's right. Just over the weekend, we had 3 suicides in Guantanamo, for example.
Yeah.
And that puts a real light on the circumstances of the operations of that facility and the treatment of detainees. Mm-hmm. That's just one of another number of things going on in the world right now.
Well, shall we start there? I think that's a very important issue. And we regularly talk with Michael Ratner and the attorneys at the Center for Constitutional Rights. And I believe this one is just off the charts. It's a blight on America. It is, in my view, unconstitutional to try to set up this camp and pretend that it's not on American soil. And therefore, these individuals who are detained there have no rights to access to our legal system whatsoever. And in your view, why did those 3 individuals commit suicide over the weekend?
Well, first of all, I think what you said is right. I've been doing human rights work for a long time. And 5 years ago, I would never imagine that I was fighting the United States government on its practice of torture. I think these suicides really are a function of the circumstances under which people live there, the interrogation techniques used, and the hopelessness, the utter hopelessness of having no expectation of getting out, no way to make a claim to get out, no court to have a hearing about whether you're innocent or guilty. So it's been well known for many years that people live in despair. There's a high rate of depression and anxiety. 20% of the people are on antidepressants at Guantanamo. There were 480, I think, instances of self-harm going back to 2003-2004. So even the suicide watches are not going to prevent suicide.
Well, and we've seen rather widespread attempts at hunger strikes and the ugly specter of force feeding of individuals who have declined to eat.
Yes.
I mean, we have a law in California now that you can no longer force feed ducks to produce foie gras. Now, we care more about ducks than about the human beings that we have detained at Guantanamo.
Yes, we issued a report at Physicians for Human Rights called Break Them Down, which was about psychological torture at Guantanamo and elsewhere. And I think that is what this is about. It's about breaking people down, denying people rights, even within detention facilities. All over the world, people engage in hunger strikes. It's a form of protest. And even for physicians, the duty is not to force-feed hunger strikers. But the Pentagon has flouted those rules and considered any form of expression or protest unacceptable, and force-feeding, even when people's health wasn't at risk, acceptable.
And it's interesting to me, I have no personal information on these 3 individuals who chose to end their lives rather than face the endless, hopeless process of detention at Guantanamo, 2 Saudis and 1 citizen of Yemen. And already in our media, they are convicting these people. They were never given access to courts, never really permitted to defend themselves or to establish or assert their innocence. And now, after they have ended their lives, we see stories about them that depict one of them as an Al-Qaeda heavyweight. That may be true, but I'm so skeptical about the whole process that it's hard to believe anything they tell us.
It is, and it's even more disturbing when the suicides are labeled by our military an act of war, as though after 5 years of hopelessness, of no due process, of no fairness, of isolation, of interrogation, of harsh conditions, that after 5 years, this act would be considered an act of war. It's
and wasn't
offensive.
The phrase asymmetrical war?
Yes.
As if
yes.
That's somehow unfair?
Well, I think the asymmetrical part is that they don't have any weapons.
Right, but it just is mind-boggling to hear it described that way.
Yes, it is, and it's disturbing that there's no recognition. You know, even enemies have dignity. They need to be treated with dignity as prisoners. That's what the Geneva Conventions say. That's what the American tradition has been. That seems to be over.
Well, and we claim that we're spreading liberty and democracy and capital F freedom in the Middle East, and then we practice these kinds of draconian Dark Ages methods, not only at Guantanamo Bay, but at the secret gulag in Eastern Europe, at Bagram, at Abu Ghraib, and other detention centers in Iraq that we aren't even allowed to know about.
Yes, and that's having a profound impact on the world, actually. For all its flaws, the United States government for many years under Republicans and Democrats stood out for human rights. It stood out for human rights. It criticized those who abused people under all kinds of administrations. Now the credibility of the United States has just plummeted. So the ability of the U.S. government to speak out against abuses elsewhere has disappeared. So that impact has been huge. It means that if you're a political prisoner somewhere else in the world, you can't anymore count on the United States on supporting you.
We're talking with Leonard Rubenstein. He is the Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights. If you have a question or comment, you can join us right now. Central Coast, 831-899-5792, or toll-free from anywhere in the continental U.S. at 888-579-2540. Dave joins us from Humboldt. Hello, Dave. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, good morning, Peter. Good afternoon, Peter. It's probably evening there, isn't it?
It is evening in the Eastern time zone, yes.
And Leonard, my simple observation is that our government has been stolen by hardcore psychopaths. They get their kicks by causing grief and harm to people. That's part of it. And Peter, I'm hoping if you run across any congressman there, you'll pose the question to them, make them think about election fraud.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we get these guys running our country, in my opinion. That's what I wanted to say.
All right, Dave.
Thank you.
What is your reaction, Leonard?
Couldn't hear.
Oh, you couldn't hear him very well. He's basically saying that he feels that our government is run by psychopaths who seem to take some kind of pleasure in things like Guantanamo and these excesses.
I'm not prepared to do any diagnosis of people leading this country. I think what we have to do is fight for human rights, fight for decency, fight for due process, and it's up to us to fight for it.
What do we do to wake up Americans to the importance of these issues and their long-term impact? It's one thing to say, well, you know, we've got these so-called bad guys at Gitmo, and a lot of people think of it as some kind of a Hollywood action movie. But this is a movie that is going to haunt us for years, if not decades, to come. We have lost whatever moral high ground the United States had.
I think people have woken up, and I think the proof of that is that last year, last winter, when Senator McCain's amendments to ban cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment in facilities operated by the United States was opposed by the president and many, many other politicians, it passed anyway. It passed because people recognized that that's not the kind of country this is, that there are strong beliefs in fairness, in treating people decently, in not degrading people, not torturing people. That's what got that amendment through. Unfortunately, the story now has kind of gone off the front pages.
Well, and unfortunately, the president chose to use one of his infamous signing statements to declare that he would observe that law if he felt like it.
It's actually much worse than that. A week ago, the Pentagon, there was a story in the L.A. Times saying that the new field manual the Army was going to put out on interrogation was going to omit the traditional reference to the Geneva Convention called Common Article 3, which says you can't humiliate and infringe the dignity of people. They're going to omit that, and that's at the direction of the White House. So the signing statement is now essentially being implemented, that the proposed manual for interrogation may well admit reference to the fundamental bedrock of treating people humanely.
That's really sad, but you're correct that it is a very important development. We're going to take a break. Leonard Rubenstein is my guest, Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights. If you have a question or comment, you can join us, too, at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. We're live from the Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hall
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820. Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
It's 4:20 and we're checking your traffic here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Diane, take it away.
Well, starting out in Salinas, southbound 101 at Spence Road, we have a stalled vehicle there. In Aroma, southbound 101, after 156, we have a three-vehicle accident actually blocking the left-hand lane there, and reports that one vehicle facing the wrong way, so CHP en route to check that out. In Watsonville, Highway 129, at Highway 1, we have a two-vehicle accident, and also a stalled vehicle in San Juan Bautista, westbound 129, before 101. It's actually a broken-down pickup truck partially blocking the westbound lane. This report is brought to you by Volkswagen Passat. The Volkswagen Passat, lowest eco emissions of any German-engineered sedan. Stop by your local Volkswagen dealer today and take a joyride. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thank you, Diane.
I could paint a picture with a pen.
Add a little traveling music as we rejoin live from Washington, D.C. here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're at the Take Back America Conference, and coming up shortly, Sibel Edmonds will be joining me here at the microphone. Your calls and comments are welcome, even though I'm way out here in Washington. We've got it all wired up using high-speed telephone lines and satellites and that kind of gizmo stuff. You can call me at 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll-free at 888-579-2540. We're with Leonard Rubenstein. He's Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights, and he is not a physician himself. I asked him his specialty during the break, and he said law is his specialty. You do surgery?
I'm a recovering lawyer.
How'd you get involved in this work?
Oh, I've been doing human rights work for many years, and it's a great organization, and we do a lot of advocacy as well as investigations.
Mm-hmm. Darfur is one of the flashpoints in the world these days. It appears to be on its way to becoming like Rwanda. And it's very interesting because President Bush, early in his term, apparently scribbled a note on a memo that talked about what had happened in Rwanda and how the world sat back and watched. And he wrote, "Not on my watch." And I take him as having a sincere intent there. He presents himself as a man of faith, and I do not have any reason to dispute that. But he seems like President Clinton was so hesitant on Rwanda to be really moving slowly, pretending that the African forces who are there, who are virtually unarmed and told not to intervene with the Janjaweed militia, you know, they're pretending that a solution is going to appear. And yet we're offering no real leadership in trying to bring that tragic situation to a close.
The problem here is leadership is exactly what's needed. You know, about a month ago, there were rallies all around the country on Darfur. There was one here in Washington. There was one in San Francisco and all over the place. And President Bush really responded to that. It was really quite extraordinary that there was a moment where he became very engaged and deeply engaged. He was calling the president of Sudan. He was doing all kinds of things. He sent his envoy to the peace negotiations when they were stalling. But that moment seems to have passed. The peace agreement has not been signed by all the rebel groups. The level of violence is increasing. Humanitarian access is decreasing. So the risks are even greater. And now it seems that the leadership has dissipated. That is the problem. You need constant leadership. There are tough issues to deal with. We need a UN force of about 20,000 people to protect Darfurians from further attacks, and it's not happening fast enough.
And to his credit, I believe Kofi Annan has tried to sound the alarm, tried to rally the world community, but it simply isn't getting a decent response.
No, you know what I say about Darfur is there's more happening in Darfur than happened in Rwanda. And they're doing something, but doing something is not the same as doing enough. And these moments of action in the UN by Bush, by others, is not sufficient.
Yeah. What can Americans do to try to bring more pressure to bear on that issue?
Well, as I mentioned a moment ago, the rallies were really effective, and the million voices for Darfur were effective. We have to keep it up. It's got to be a relentless push so that the pressure on the president remains and that it will engage him if we put the pressure on. It was an amazing moment that a lot of people don't recognize, how effective the mobilization across the political spectrum, left, right, middle, religious groups of all kinds, liberal groups, conservative groups. It was quite an amazing outpouring, and we have to restore that. So people have to keep writing, keep sending the postcards in, keep sending emails about action on Darfur.
Len Rubenstein is with us from he's the executive director of Physicians for Human Rights. Now, on that issue, Senator Brownback, a Republican from Kansas, with whom I agree on almost nothing, has shown real leadership and a real commitment to trying to build bridges and broker resolutions there. Who else would you identify on Capitol Hill as very active and knowledgeable on this issue?
Well, it is amazing. We have to put aside some of our political prejudices that there have been people across the political spectrum working on this. Senator Leahy, as usual, is very concerned. There have been a number of members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats. Congressman Wolf, for example, from here in Northern Virginia, has been very active.
Senator Obama has spoken.
Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. Senator Obama has been a leader. There have been a lot, and it may not be predictable based on the usual liberal conservative breakdown. And you would think, given that, the response would be adequate. And the reason it isn't adequate is it's difficult. Pressure has to be sustained. You have to be willing to take on difficult governments and use political capital. And that's what's been episodic.
Moving to another area of the world, East Timor and Indonesia and other parts of that country have very significant religious and internal strife. But there seems to be a very high resistance to outside aid. We do have Australians in Timor right now that I'm aware of. But these are very difficult situations with governments who seem to be highly resistant to outside help.
I would actually put it a little differently. East Timor, as you may recall, went through a terrible, terrible period under the thumb of the Indonesians, and finally, about 5 years ago, gained their independence.
Uh-huh.
And the UN came in with support from a number of countries, including Australia, to stabilize the country. And there was a lot of hope for East Timor and the people there. But what happened was that the effort wasn't sustained over a long enough period of time. It's not easy to recover from years and years of horrific crimes against civilian populations, and that effort simply wasn't sustained long enough.
Mm-hmm. And just room really to talk about one more area of the globe, and I'm thinking of the Gulf Coast of the United States of America. Do you believe that we have had an adequate response to the ravages of Hurricane Katrina?
Well, I think what we have to look at, I'm not an expert on hurricane relief, but I can tell you from a human rights and civil rights perspective that what it did was showed for a moment the kind of racist policies that lead to the tragedies in New Orleans and the surrounding area, that the circumstance under which people live, the inadequacy of the evacuation plan, the indifference to people suffering right after it happened, that is what it revealed about the United States. And remember, there was a moment when the president said, oh, yes, we have a problem here with how these people are treated.
Yeah.
If you're black and you're poor, we have to do something about that. Well, that lasted about 5 minutes. That's the underlying problem.
Len Rubenstein, thanks for joining us. Executive Director of Physicians for Human Rights. A website you want to mention?
It's physiciansforhumanrights.org or phrusa.org, whichever you can remember.
Very good, sir. Thanks for joining us today. Whistleblower Sabell Edmonds next here on the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, The Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Washington, D.C. I am Peter B. Collins, originating from the Hilton Hotel, which is the scene for the conference hosted by the Campaign for America's Future, entitled Take Back America. And in my addled brain, if we were to take back America, there are a number of rights that need to be wronged. There are a number of wrongs for which accountability must be established. And sitting across from me is a woman who has battled our government and set an example, I think, for all of us about principle and about embracing the true meaning of the United States Constitution. Her name is Sibel Edmonds, and I have spoken with her long distance on many, many occasions, been deeply impressed by her, and this is my first opportunity to sit across from her and appreciate your fabulous smile. Sibel, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, and so nice to meet you, finally.
Well, and I'm just pleased, as I mentioned before we came on here, I kind of expected some goons in uniform to be following you as you entered here tonight. But you told me that you're kind of old news now.
Right. As you know, so many whistleblowers have come forward, and so many have been gagged, so many have been fired, so many have been placed on administrative leave. So as we see, this has become a trend, unfortunately. So it has become a norm.
Yeah. We've seen in recent weeks a spate of issues related to the state's secret privilege asserted by our government. They are now using that with sealed documents in a courtroom in San Francisco to try to block any legal investigation or lawsuits related to the NSA's spying program. There are other individuals who have been slapped with this kind of a gag. And when you first came forward, Sibel, without patting myself on the back, I recognized that you were not alone and that if they would treat you this way, that they would have no hesitation to use this force to try to silence anyone who wants to present information that they find inconvenient. So you've started an organization for whistleblowers. Tell us about that and the extent to which you have attracted support.
Sure. First, let me tell you that what you just said is absolutely true. I was the first state secret privilege case for this administration. Since my case, the administration has invoked the state secret privilege 19 times, more than all the other times combined during the history of the United States. Okay. Today, the ACLU, with four writers that they are representing, they brought this case in Detroit in court, and the government went in there and they invoked the state secret privilege again. Mm-hmm. And they said, we can't even discuss this case because it's covered by the state secret privilege. And what people didn't realize 3 years ago, what you realized, was that, okay, I guess she was the FBI, so it's all top secret stuff or spooky stuff, and they are invoking the state secret privilege. In Arar's case, the Canadian guy that we basically detained and sent back to Syria, the Canadian citizen, they said, oh, well, he was the suspect. Today, we are seeing that, no, it goes beyond just the intelligence agencies or terrorist suspects. They're going this with this trend of invoking the state secret privilege because First of all, it's not even a law. It's based on common law. It was never passed. It was never approved by the Congress. And now they have this carte blanche. They just go out there and they say state secret privilege, and we don't even have to explain why.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, our courts are granting this. So we haven't seen the courts and the judges standing up and saying, wait a second.
Right.
This is enough. And you have to come and justify invocation of state secret privilege. And we haven't seen it yet to date.
And just a quick side trip here. Over the last few days, the case from San Francisco was appealed to the circuit court here in Washington, D.C., where last year, a woman who I find to be so conservative as to be off the charts, Janice Rogers Brown, who used to sit on the Supreme Court in California, was permitted by the Democrats to be confirmed as part of the deal around the so-called nuclear option. So the Democrats blinked. And they allowed this extreme and very radical judge to be made a lifetime member of the appeals court, and one of the first critical cases that's come before her is this one, where she voted to affirm the government's claim of state secrets. And, you know, this just is so un-American. And, Sibel, I want you to take a moment here to explain to people who are maybe listening for the first time, if you could briefly, your history, your hiring at the FBI shortly after 9/11, and what led to the controversies that you've been involved with since.
Sure. I was hired by the Bureau as language specialist for Farsi. This is the language spoken in Iran. It's
right.
A Persian language, Turkish, and Azerbaijani. And I started working for the FBI 3 days after September 11, 2001. And I was granted top secret clearance. So I was translating information coming via counterintelligence wiretaps or documents, interpreting for detainees' interviews, and about a few months after I started working there, I came across some serious issues, some of them involving security breaches, some of them involving intentional blocking of translations within the counterintelligence department, and some other serious issues that have not, you know, come public yet.
Mm-hmm.
After reporting these issues internally, I was asked to keep quiet, and they were going to cover up these issues. So I went to the Congress, and as a result, they retaliated against me. This is the FBI. They confiscated my home computers. They forced me to take polygraph exams. And finally, they fired me, saying that they were just going to fire me because they chose to fire me for whistleblowing activities.
Did they give you a cause?
No. Uh-huh. Actually,
they just said, you don't need to come to work anymore. Here's your last check.
They sent a termination letter saying that you have been terminated purely for the government's convenience. That's the only sentence we had in that letter. It was a two-sentence letter.
Wow, how gratifying.
A few months later, we went to court and tried to fight the case under my First Amendment right. And the Attorney General back then, Ashcroft, invoked the state secret privilege, saying everything about Sibel Edmonds and her case is considered state secrets and
right.
The highest level top secret classified information.
And then they went bonkers and reclassified information that had never been secret, like a letter from Senator Leahy and Senator Grassley arguing your case.
Absolutely. They retroactively classified congressional information that was available for 2 years on the websites of Senator Leahy, Senator Grassley, and Senator Grassley rightfully called this officially gagging the United States Congress. A few months later, when the 9/11 family members' attorneys, they subpoenaed my deposition, the Attorney General, Ashcroft, invoked the state secret privilege for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
So, for the past 3 years, we have exhausted all channels as far as the courts are concerned, because every time we went to court and then appealed again, the government would go to the judge and they would say, this is covered by the state secret privilege. They would argue the case without us present in the courtroom.
Sure.
Even when my attorneys had top secret clearance, they said that my attorneys could not be present. It was just so Kafkaesque. During my appellate court session with the ACLU, we argued our case, and then at this point, the judges asked the security guards to remove physically my attorneys and I from the court stand by the doors while the government argued its case.
Wow.
And here you had the reporters, you know, standing outside and saying, well, what is this?
Gosh,
and
isn't there a thing in our Constitution that says you have a right to face your accusers?
Well, actually, this administration says that you don't have really First Amendment right. It's conditional. They are saying that you really, the Fourth Amendment right, it is conditional. Under certain circumstances, you may have it. And unfortunately, the way they have gone about doing this incrementally have desensitized people. I mean, at every single one of these incidents, I expected a big public outrage. People saying, you know, especially people who call themselves patriots, who say, this is not my country. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. This is anti-constitution, right?
And where are they, Sybil Edmonds?
I don't know. Well, today here, this is actually uplifting. It's good to see at least some of these voices get together and not, you know, not pretend that, okay, this is not my problem. So it's good to see this. It's good to see some of the grassroots level activism, you know, within the blog sphere. But we need more than that. And I was just talking to a friend a few minutes ago and about the elections in Southern California, saying we're not there yet. It's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough. And the good news is this. Here, I brought with me a list of all my members. Mm-hmm. This is for National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. We have 82 National Security Whistleblowers. The average years of experience for these people is 21 years. These are the people, these are the patriots who have served their governments an average 21 years. And when they came forward to report government waste, fraud, abuse, like me, they've been either gagged, fired, put on administrative leave. This is what happens. And for those people, for those listeners who think this is a problem for whistleblowers, I would love for them to think again, because this has to do with the public's right to know. Doing this to whistleblowers and for the Congress not providing, you know, sufficient level of protection for whistleblowers, they are basically saying the public doesn't have the right to know.
Right.
And that's why it's not a problem limited to some whistleblowers or as some people they label as some disgruntled employees. This is the problem that faces our country, and this is everybody's problem.
And Sybil Edmonds, you know what is so uncomfortable about this? What it describes is the early outlines of a fascist government imposing a police state on what we call a democracy or a republic. And too many people are distracted. They care more. They have more passion about who wins American Idol than about the future of our country, about the elections that we conduct, and about this widespread power grab that has occurred while people have been distracted by a combination of fear, which has been fostered and fomented by our government, and these readily available distractions, which we're told, you know, are okay, we're fighting a war over there, but don't you worry. Go shopping, watch a little TV, and hug your kids.
Right. You're absolutely right. And the attitude, or even this frame of mind that says, well, this has nothing to do with me, it doesn't touch me. It's either about some whistleblowers somewhere out there, it's either about some detainees. They think they are safe, they are not touched by these issues. And they don't realize this, and they are going to wait for those people. They are going to wait until it's their turn.
Yeah.
When somebody comes and knock on their door and say, okay, we are going to search this house and we're going to take you for interrogation for 3 days, it's going to dawn on them there, because when you go and look back in the history, do you think, you know, the German people, the majority there, when they were going through their period with Hitler, that they thought, oh, this is awful. It was all done under the name of patriotism, protectionism. It was, you know,
going to make you safer.
Exactly.
We need a few concentration
Absolutely.
Camps. And people get, when you try to look forward and take a look at the landscape today and how it might really go dark and go south going forward. For example, there was a no-bid contract granted to Halliburton in January of this year, some $380 million, to build 6 detention camps along the U.S. border.
Right.
And the media ignores it. we've covered it on this program, and there are a few reporters who've dug into it, but you'll never, at least so far, I haven't seen any story about that in a major newspaper or on broadcast television.
You just named one of the main factors for why we are where we are today, and that is the media and the role that has been abdicated by them. And, you know, we started with you. You're the first show that we did, actually was one of my first ever interviews. Was this was during a time that I consider myself being naive back then. We're saying, we are going to appeal this in the court, and I'm going to demand and ask with petition the Congress and the judiciary committee. Peter, I tried all those channels. I took it as far as I could. It didn't go anywhere. It didn't work. And the system proved to be completely broken. I pursued the court channels. I pursued the congressional channels. And here you have an Inspector General's report by the Department of Justice saying everything I said was confirmed.
And the doors of justice have been slammed in your face.
Completely.
We'll
now,
pick up there as we continue. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Sabelle Edmonds is with me here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're live from Washington, D.C. If you have a question or comment, get on the line now, 831-899-5792, or toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Tom Hartman.
You go to MerleHaggard.com, the guy who did the song Okie from Muskogee, and right there on his site is him doing a music video of his song where he's saying basically no to the Bushies.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
I'm telling you, when you've lost Merle Haggard, then you know George W. Bush is in serious, serious trouble. When country music fans turn against the president, the most conservative part of America is gone, and they're not going to come back.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
continue on the Peter B. Collins Show live from Washington, D.C. Former Senator Mike Gravel will join us after the top of the hour to talk about his campaign for president and the national initiative that he's proposing. And if you'd like to talk with us, it is possible. We've got it all wired up, and all you got to do is call the usual numbers, 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, or toll free at 888-579-2540. We're with Sibel Edmonds, the whistleblower who I consider one courageous American. And just before the break, Sibel, you talked about the members of your whistleblowers organization. How many are there?
We have 82 national security whistleblowers from the FBI, NSA, CIA, DIA, and the Department of Homeland Security.
And so you mentioned during the break that when these individuals talk with you, that you can't offer them any optimism. You can't offer them hope under our Constitution, under our justice system, and under just what we believe to be fundamental American fairness.
Neither can I tell them to stop and give up. I can't do that either, because even I haven't given up yet. Because when you give up, then that's it. Because one of the other things, besides all the great things they have said, are founding fathers was the eternal vigilance, remember?
Oh, yeah.
That's why they put that word there. They said eternal, and it's an ongoing battle. And you would think that we would learn lessons from the history and what we went through with McCarthy or the Japanese internment or all the different things that we went through, and we go through them, then we say how much mistakes we committed and how many wrongdoings we committed, that we are ashamed of what we did, then we go back and repeat it again, which brings back this whole argument of, is it really circular? Do we ever learn? With these people, and the average years of experience for these whistleblowers is 21 years. These are the patriotic individuals who have been serving their countries, their governments, for an average 21 years. And then they did the right thing by reporting government waste, fraud, abuse, because they believe in the public's right to know, because they believe in doing the right thing, because they take their constitutional responsibility very seriously. And as a result, they have been gagged, fired, put on admin leave. You just mentioned Tony Schaefer. Mm-hmm. He's gagged.
Danger.
Yeah.
He wants to expose it. He's gone to great lengths. Ask Congressman Weldon, a Republican from Pennsylvania. Weldon has held hearings where, again, state secrets have been asserted, and the Congress has accepted this incredible power grab by the administration.
Completely. They have voluntarily given up all their authority, all their rights. They have diminished themselves by doing so, and it's mind-boggling. And let's say with these people, the list that you have in your hand, we have Republicans, we have independents, we have Democrats, we have libertarians. What we have disillusioned patriots,
yeah,
who have been let down by both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get their countries back, and they say, let's, as far as the Congress goes, we need to do something, because that's why we had the separation of powers in the first place. So we wouldn't be in this position,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Well, it doesn't work, obviously. It didn't work in this case. And we need to find out what went wrong. I mean, what is going wrong with our courts? I mean, what's wrong with these judges?
And, Sibel, you're asking all the right questions. And if I can put it this way, I'm very proud that you're an American citizen, but you weren't born here. And there are too many people who are born here and given citizenship who do not have the same understanding or bring the same passion to their rights and responsibilities in this country. And I consider you just so inspiring to offer that. And on the other hand, I feel bad as an American that you've been treated the way you have. It's just un-American, and we've got to put a stop to it.
Well, you're doing your share, and let's hope everybody else does theirs. And what you mentioned also comes with this caveat. When you have seen the other side of the token, when you have lived in this country, that you don't have constitution and those rights, and you know what can happen.
Yeah.
You know the ultimate the ultimate end for these types of dictatorship, that then it gives you more reason to fight, because you know what it is like to be on the other side, and we don't want the side to change and become the other side.
Just to pull one name off the list here, I'm so proud to know Ray McGovern, who is one of your whistleblowers.
Absolutely.
And who had the courage to stand up to Donald Rumsfeld in Atlanta about a month, 5 weeks ago. And I just need to repeat, for people who are hearing this for the first time, Ray McGovern was not a heckler. There were hecklers present in the audience who did rudely shout out remarks to Secretary Rumsfeld, not Ray McGovern. He was invited to the event. He was invited to ask questions, and he took that opportunity. And I am so proud that he stood up and pushed the secretary on the questions that our lapdog press is unwilling to put to him.
Right. Ray has been with us for over 2 years, and we are honored to have Ray with us too. And he's articulate, he's outspoken, he's a great patriot.
Yeah. So we're here at this conference called Take Back America. And in your ideal mind, if the Democrats are successful in at least taking back one House this November, what kind of accountability, I'm not asking for payback, but what kind of accountability would you like to see, Sybil Edmonds?
Well, it's what we call direct accountability. And actually, it's what some of these people, some of the Democrats, have been trying to push hard for it. For example, Congressman Waxman. He has been pushing for hearings, and then he wants to have accountability in place. You need to go... Boy, it's going to be tough, because you're looking at a lot of heads that need to be rolled. And they need to be rolled in order to really take back our country, take back America.
Yeah. Well, it looks like you're in it for the long haul.
Well, we have at least 3 more years that I'm not going to give up, and we are going to go through this period. And I'm telling people not to give up, and I'm so honored to be on your show and be invited again.
I don't have my website or my computer opened up to your website, so give us the National Whistleblowers website address.
Sure. It's www.nswbc.org, and that stands for National Security Whistleblowers Coalition.org.
Okay, nswbc.org. Again, nswbc.org. Sybil Edmonds, such a pleasure to meet you in person. Let's keep fighting.
Likewise, thank you very much.
Okay, good to talk with you. Coming up next, retired Senator Mike Gravel, a Democrat from Alaska, will be joining us. He's announced his candidacy for president in 2008, and he is promoting a national initiative process that we've talked about on this program before. Also on the way tonight, Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine, will join me in the next hour as we continue live from Washington, D.C., here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie, as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Here we go again. Florida Governor Jeb Bush is telling people on the Gulf Coast to get out of harm's way now.
I signed an executive order declaring a state of emergency in Florida.
The declaration allows that the state can deploy people, equipment, and relief supplies to respond quickly after Hurricane Alberto makes landfall.
It's not quite a hurricane yet, but Tropical Storm Alberto continues to gain strength as it approaches the coast, expected to strike tomorrow. More than 20,000 people have to pack up and leave. State meteorologist Ben Nelson says Alberto will be a minimal hurricane, but it'll still pack a punch.
You could see as much as 8 to 10 feet of storm surge along and just to the right of where Alberto's center makes landfall.
That's likely to be at or near Cedar Key. Al-Qaeda in Iraq has named a successor to the late Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, describing Abu Hamza al-Muhajir as someone with jihad experience and knowledge. CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer in Baghdad reports U.S. forces are making the most of the intelligence gathered since Zarqawi's death.
The U.S. military announced it's carried out 140 major operations, killed 32 insurgents, and detained 178, including one described as a high-value target with a $50,000 price tag on his head.
President Bush today convened a high-level meeting at Camp David.
This summit carries messages for the domestic audience and for Iraq. The president's calling for patience from American voters who are increasingly anxious about the U.S. role in Iraq. He says the new Iraqi government is just getting on its feet. In the morning, he'll use a teleconference to urge Iraqi leaders to stand firm against insurgents.
CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer. Factional fighting among Palestinians escalated today. Hamas gunmen attacked a security agency in Gaza controlled by the Fatah movement. And hours later, Fatah forces in Ramallah rampaged against the Hamas-led government, firing shots at the parliament and cabinet buildings and setting fires. The militants say they abducted a Hamas lawmaker but later released him. He wore a helmet when he led the Pittsburgh Steelers to their Super Bowl win, but Ben Roethlisberger was not wearing a helmet this morning when his motorcycle collided with a car. KDKA Radio's Rob Milford has details.
Apparently someone pulled right out in front of him. He smashed into the front right quarter of the car, and then he went flying into the windshield of the car. Witnesses at the scene say that he had a bleeding head injury when paramedics got there.
Roethlisberger's hospitalized with a broken jaw and nose. He was riding a Suzuki Hayabusa, billed as the world's fastest street bike. Suzuki advises riders to always wear a helmet, eye protection, and protective clothing. On Wall Street, another down day. The Dow Industrials lost 99 points to close at 10,792. The Nasdaq, 43 points lower at 2,091. This is CBS News.
What tobacco issues are important to you?
I do not want my kids to smoke.
Last night, Sarah went to PhilipMorrisUSA.com.
I knew I needed a few tips on what to say and how to say it if my message was going to sink in.
If you're a parent who'd like help starting the conversation with your kids about not smoking and handling peer pressure, expert advice and information is available online. Find out more. Visit PhilipMorrisUSA.com.
Every day, millions of people go to Match.com. So many of them find love, get married, and raise families. So, is online dating for you? Now, Match.com has created a new starter kit so you can find out. And for a limited time, it's free for everyone who visits Match.com. Online dating is a great way to meet someone these days. Get going with our new starter kit. Yours free. Only at Match.com, the number one site for love.
Are you a talented musician? Are you female? If you answered yes to both of those questions, you might be able to join Beyoncé Knowles on her next tour. Auditions are being held in five cities, including Chicago. WBBM Radio's Steve Miller has the story there.
They're expecting as many as 300 young women to try out in Chicago alone. Fred Nelson, one of the judges, says Beyoncé is looking for an all-girl band of about nine. Nelson says they've seen several drummers.
Which is kind of amazing. I didn't know we'd see that many girl drummers, you know, and they're good.
Yeah. One of the ones he singled out as good, 23-year-old Monica Culpepper of Cleveland, Ohio, who's been playing the drums since she was 8.
You know, people are born with a purpose, and that's my purpose, playing drums.
Now she's hoping for a callback on Thursday. Steve Miller, CBS News, Chicago.
The tour will support Beyoncé's second solo album. You can also audition in Atlanta, Houston, Burbank, and Weehawken, New Jersey. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
The following is a message from Pfizer.
Dr. Drew Pinsky here on a subject most guys would rather ignore, erectile dysfunction. Believe it or not, nearly half of all guys over 40, and some even younger, have ED. If your sex life leaves something to be desired, even part of the time, do something about it. To learn more about ED and how to treat it, talk to your doctor or visit justasktoday.com. Do it for you and your partner.
To increase driving pleasure for all motorists, the Michelin Man is on a door-to-door quest to collect signatures for a petition to build an American Autobahn. Visit MichelinMan.com to learn how the uncompromising performance of Michelin MX Series touring tires can give you the confidence to achieve driving bliss on any road you travel. To find a Michelin dealer near you, call 1-800-MICHELIN. Michelin, a better way forward.
We head into another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C. We're deep inside the Beltway here at the Take Back America Conference. And coming up in about a half an hour, we'll be joined by Jay Harris. He's the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine. We're conspiring with Mother Jones here. You heard Angie Coiro, the host of Mother Jones Radio, on with us a little bit earlier today. And joining me now is Senator Mike Gravel, Democrat from Alaska who served with distinction. And he now has some really interesting ideas about how to change the landscape of America's democracy and move to much more direct democracy. And to advance that cause, he has announced his candidacy for President of the United States in 2008. Mike Gravel, welcome to our program.
Thank you. And, of course, you failed to mention that I'm the front runner because I'm the only guy that's filed. The others are just sniffing around seeing if they can raise enough money. We believe enough in our ideas that I'm just putting it out there.
Well, I think that's an important point because we regard California as the ATM for national politics. We never get any real love because the presidential races are decided before the California primary, and the polls determine whether the candidates actually play there or not, spend any money, you know, come out and see us. And already Joe Biden and a number of others have been making frequent trips to California to see if they can crack the ATM and get some of that Hollywood and other money out.
Well, I hope I can do also, but that's not my first priority. First priority is going to be New Hampshire, because I think New Hampshire is an ideal state for a person who doesn't have any money who can get the message out to the people. We were there for a week already, and I'm going back a week after. I was absolutely surprised that the people in New Hampshire were so friendly. I'm born and raised in Springfield, Massachusetts. New Englanders are a little cool, but these people were very excited, and two, they take their job of evaluating presidential candidates very seriously, and they're happy to be with you. They ask questions. They want to have your picture taken with you.
Yeah.
They never know who's going to win.
Yeah. And what about the Iowa caucuses? That's early bird approach.
Well, except that we're going out there tomorrow, and we'll be there all week. And
Vilsack, the governor, is going to be here tomorrow.
That's right, because he's running for president.
Right.
He's sniffing around.
He hasn't
announced. He's going to see how much money he can raise.
Right.
I think he's a very substantial person. I think that he will give a good account of himself. But I just want to talk about this conference for just for a moment.
Okay.
Because then I'd like to follow up on what happened with Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah, Sybil Edmonds.
Yeah,
she says Sybil, not Sybil.
Sybil
Shepherd, Sybil Edmonds.
I know, I got confused. They're both very attractive.
Yes, they are.
What this conference is just fabulous. They've brought together a great deal of enthusiasm. There's a lot of magnetism going on. People are just really turned on. And, of course, they're fed up, like the rest of Americans are, fed up with what's going on in our level of governance. The difficulty with this conference is that people think that it's going to change. It's not going to change. Oh, we may get some Democrats elected. Democrats may take over the White House. But what else is new? We are caught in the throes of representative government. And that's the problem. Representative government is topped out in this 21st century. So if the government is the problem and representative government is the problem, there's only two venues, the people or the government. So we
how can we trust the people? They're watching Jerry Springer and Montel and all those shows that have hosts with only one name, you know, as they dumpster dive through the lowest of American culture. How are we going to get direct democracy from people who don't even pay attention to the big issues of the day?
Well, first off, yeah, I think you're enamored of the fact that we got to have a big turnout. It's never been a big turnout. It's the quality of the turnout that votes. And we've been weaned as children that, well, my God, you control the government on election day by voting. Well, all you do on election day is give your power away to politicians who have manipulated you with special interest money to get you to vote for them, and then they get gerrymandering in place so that they can stay in office.
But why should we listen to you? You served in the Senate. You got a fat pension. What do you bring to this?
Oh, it's a fat pension. I live off of Social Security, and my present wife supports me.
Wait a minute.
There's no fat pension in my house.
What happened?
My wife got that.
Oh.
So, first off, it wasn't that fat in those days. Times have changed. So, no, there's no fat pension here.
Okay, then let me turn it around. Why should we listen to you? Because of your service in the United States Senate. Did you learn something that we need to know?
Been there, done that, and know how it works. And that's the reason I've come to the conclusion, after being fed up with the way it works, fed up with myself, I left and for 10 years did nothing involving politics or government. And then when I finally came to the conclusion that we got to talk about solutions, a politician, and we see it here extensively, a politician can tell you to go to hell and make you look forward to the trip. What they do is they dramatize the issues that they know you're interested in. And so you say, boy, that guy's real smart, because I believe just like him. Well, that's the art. Now, let him come and tell you solutions, and your eyes begin to roll a little bit. And that's the problem that I have in trying to tell Americans that the answer is with them. We have to let the people decide. And there's no reason why the American people should not be voting on every single policy issue that affects their lives.
But can we have some sort of a test, not a poll test, but some way to make sure that they have baseline information and they don't vote based on a 30-second commercial or a misleading speech by an opponent?
Well, I got to tell you, I hope you and I make those decisions, because we'll be dictators in this country. No, you either approach this and have unreserved faith in the people, or you're not in the game. Secondly, the people in their constituent assembly, I'm not talking about one person or another person, I'm talking about the people together, 150 million people who can vote and should vote, but they don't. That constituency is smarter, will always be smarter than their leaders, always. I'll give you this example. Would you trust the majority of 535 people or the majority of 150 million people? I think you'll get a better decision on the latter.
Well, I'll certainly get one that represents the interests of the people as opposed to the self-interest of the representatives.
That's what it's all about.
Mike Gravel is with us here, former U.S. Senator from Alaska, and he is promoting a national initiative. I want you to go to the website and read about it, NI4D.us.
Right.
I did that from memory. NI4D.us.
And that's the C3 nonprofit, the Democracy Foundation. The other is you can go to
Mike Gravel?
No.
Isn't there one there?
What is it? Bible.
He's going to look it up.
Huh?
Philly 2?
It's been a long day. No, not Philly 2. God, no.
Okay, he's pulling a card
pulling
out of his
card
wallet.
Out. That's what happens here. Let's say, okay. Well, nationalinitiative.us will take you to the other.
Okay.
And my site would be www.mikegravel.gravel08.us.
Okay.
And that's one's a political site, one's a nonprofit site. And of course, they're very separate, because I've resigned from the foundation because I don't want a conflict of interest. I don't want to jeopardize those corporations.
All right. Well, as we continue, I want to hear a little bit more about this and also talk about some of the issues that we might be able to work on through a national initiative. But I wanted to follow up with our conversation with Sybil Edmonds about your role in backing whistleblowers when you were a member of the United States Senate.
There's an interesting phenomenon that's going to come to the fore, because I'll be writing about it. Let's look at what happened with the Pentagon Papers. Daniel Ellsberg made a decision he had to release these papers. He went to Bill Fulbright, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, and Bill wouldn't touch it. He says, I can't do this because I'm chairman of the committee. He then went to Pete McCloskey, gave him a few. McCloskey put him in a safe and had his picture taken in front of the safe. Then he went to George McGovern, and McGovern said, on the advice of Gaylord Nelson, don't you dare touch those papers, because if you do, you're going to not be able to be president. So what happens? He can't get a member of Congress. Now, why did he go to Congress? He wanted to get the cover of a member of Congress under the speech and debate clause so that he would not be indicted.
Mm-hmm.
So now he can't get a Congress, so he has to go to the media. Now, the media, as you know, right now is being harangued by the Bush administration. Oh, we may put some in jail or sources and what have you, and who's leaking what. Well, if the members of Congress would realize that they can't be touched, there's no member of Congress that can be bound by any secrecy anywhere in the U.S. government. None.
Well, then why are these people so callow when it comes to the NSA?
They're gutless.
Why can't we find more than two or three senators to support Russ Feingold's very legitimate, very narrowly framed censure resolution?
Well, when he says censure, that's what... censure is nothing.
Right.
That's what Bill Clinton wanted to be censured. He didn't want to be impeached. He wanted to be censured. I can't believe the word is impeachment. Censure has got nothing, means nothing. And to put it in and to offer it in terms of the Senate control of the Republicans, it's nothing. Here, you want to talk about what you can do? In the old days when we were in fighting Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
we filibustered the appropriations.
Yeah.
I'd like to see these people filibuster. Here, we've got right before us this week the legislation
supplemental. Right.
I'd like to see somebody filibuster that. Now, it's even worse than that. Because what happens, somebody in the House and somebody in the Senate both put together to limit the amount of money you couldn't spend. It's a reverse earmark. Don't spend any money on military bases.
Uh-huh.
And what happens? They strip it out in conference.
Right.
Now, I'd like to see if there's anybody got any guts who put it in originally will stand up and filibuster it. Now,
well,
sure
just on that point, Barbara Lee is a member of the House. She was here today. She is incensed about the way the process has been abused to strip that language out. But she is not a senator, and she can't filibuster.
House, no, but what the House can do, she could get up enough Democrats, walk to the well, and then walk right out of the chamber and protest. And to get the media attention so the American people could realize we are building permanent bases in Iraq. Now, what is that all about when the American people want to get out? And the proof of it is that the money's there, the White House orchestrated it. Now, the House could do that with drama, and then the Senate, Feingold, should filibuster this. If he doesn't mm-hmm. filibuster this, then I got to tell you, you know, there's just too much imagery going on.
Well, he's supposed to be here tomorrow. If I can corner him, I'm going to ask him that.
You corner him and ask him why
question.
He doesn't filibuster the money? Because, oh, we've got to support the troops. You know the best way to support the troops? Get them the hell out.
We're talking to Senator Mike Gravel, who formerly served in the Senate from Alaska. We're going to take a break and return. You can join us at 831-899-5792 or toll-free 888-579-2540. Live from Washington, D.C., it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Join R.J. Moyer for his weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyet brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyet. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
It's 5:21. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show on KRXA 540, and here is Metro Diane.
We have an accident in Watsonville. It's Highway 129 and Highway 1. Two vehicles involved in that one. And also a pedestrian on the roadway in Aptos at State Park Drive at Highway 1. This is a pretty dangerous area for a pedestrian to be wandering around, so CHP is en route for that. In San Juan Batista, southbound 101 after Rocks Road. An earlier three-vehicle accident that had been in the roadway has now been cleared and is on City Street, so tow trucks en route to clear that out totally. Also some road work in Salinas, Davis Road between Westridge Parkway and Auto Center Circle. There's maintenance work going on in the area as crews resurface the roadway, so expect delays. This report is brought to you by GoldenPalace.com. Which famous online casino school bought a grilled cheese sandwich for $28,000?
I don't know. Tell us.
GoldenPalace.com. Learn to play your favorite Vegas-style games. GoldenPalace.com. Check it out today. I'm Diana with traffic on KRXA 540.
Past the hour as we continue live from Washington, D.C. on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm here at the Take Back America Conference, and Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones, will join us after the next break. We continue with Senator Mike Gravel here on the Peter B. Collins Show, and he has this fabulous idea. He's running for president to draw attention to his proposal for a national initiative. And let me just give you the example. I've talked to people here today, and I believe that health care issues and the erosion of our employer-paid health care benefits in this country are the biggest threat to families in this nation right now. Yet it's locked down. Hillary Clinton is finally putting a toe in the water after her rebuke in the early 90s, the health care reform project that she undertook, which was riddled with problems. At any rate, most Americans know that they have to pay more for health insurance than they ever did before, that their co-pays for prescriptions are higher, their co-pays to go visit a doctor are higher, yet Washington is locked down on this issue. Between the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry and the HMOs and Dr. Bill Frist in the United States Senate, nothing significant will happen if we rely on our representatives to do the work. But you have an idea for a national initiative, and please use healthcare as an example of how we could go around the lockdown in Congress and make change.
And that's, of course, the sadness of this wonderful meeting, is that they want healthcare, but they're not going to get it. It's locked down, as you point out. Because the pharmaceutical have enough power, and the insurance companies, which is the major subsidy, in this, they got enough power to stop anything. Now, the Democrats that are raising money, millions and millions, where do you think it's coming from? Insurance companies and the pharmaceuticals and others.
Yeah.
And so they're going to be co-opted before they even get there. You will never see. Keep in mind, Bismarck had it in Germany in 1888. Harry Truman, 50 years ago, wanted this, and it's never happened. And it won't happen now, regardless of who becomes president, including me. How we'll have it happen is we'll empower the people to make laws, and then the people will be able to vote for health care, universal, single payer, in a heartbeat, one election. And that's all it will take. So if you want to get health care in this country, don't look to representative government. Look to yourself. Go to the website, nationalinitiative.us, and vote for the national initiative. And that's how you're going to get health care within 3 years.
Now, how do I vote for this, and how is it different from voting for American Idol?
Oh, well, no, American Idol is a good example. 63 million people voted for the last American Idol.
That's misdirected direct democracy.
It's democracy. But I got to tell you, if we had 60 million Americans vote for the national initiative, it becomes the law of the land, and the Supreme Court couldn't touch it. 60 million Americans. And so that's the reason why in my candidacy, the hallmark is let the people decide. Now, the minutiae, the details of that are complicated. The details of running the Congress are complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've copied that. This is not only to make legislation at the federal level. When this is enacted, the national initiative is enacted into law, it will operate in every government jurisdiction of the United States.
And one of my first reservations, which you have answered, is based on our experience in California, where Hiram Johnson's idea for recall and for initiatives have been turned on their proverbial ears. And because corporations and other special interests can dump tons of money in to promote an initiative they favor, we don't have real direct democracy. But your measure does not permit corporate involvement.
That's one of the things that solves it. But more than that, in the 24 states that have initiatives, they have a situation where there's no procedures. Now, in any legislative body, you need procedures. You need to have hearings. You need to have markups. You need to have deliberations. You need advisory votes. You need proper communications. We have written all that into law. It's a federal law accompanied by a federal constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That together is less than 5,600 words. And if people would read that, but then I'm not asking them to read that. Not everybody's turned on by the wonkishness of legislation.
Right.
What they have to understand is they will be empowered to make laws. And you are as qualified, and you are the authority on your own life. And so the people within hearing of my voice have to understand that they have the right and the latent power to make every decision that affects their life of a policy nature in government. And that not only involves health care, that involves war, that involves energy, that involves tax reform. None of these things are going to happen unless the people step forward and acquire this power. It's not voting on Election Day. It's voting for yourself at the national initiative. And when 60 million Americans do it, it is the law of the land. And you are hereby empowered to make laws that affect your life.
Well, I think it is a great idea. I think it's an idea whose time has come. And I'm really glad that you're championing it.
I got to tell you, the rest of my life, whether I win or lose on presidency, and if I become president and this is not in place, that will be a number one priority to get Americans to vote to empower themselves.
And can I have a ride on Air Force One?
You sure can, Peter. I'm going to have a bunch of my relatives. I don't have any big donors to give rides to.
Mike Gravel, it's always a pleasure. We're going to keep talking about this.
Thank you, Peter.
That's my threat, and I'll carry it out.
That's right.
Great to see you, Senator.
Thank you for doing that.
All right. Thanks for joining us here this evening. Coming up in just a moment, Jay Harris will join us, the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine. We're live from Washington, D.C., at the site of the Take Back America Conference. And tomorrow on our program, Barbara Ehrenreich, also Eric Bollert and David Sirota, among others, here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Angelina's Bakery would like to thank and officially recognize all fathers for their hard work. And in appreciation, Angelina's Bakery would like to invite you to come by and enter to participate in a raffle in which you can win big for Dad. There will be a variety of prizes and gift card discounts for in-store use, so stop by and surprise your father. The owners and staff of Angelina's Bakery would like to thank all fathers and wish each and every father a wonderful day. Come to Angelina's Bakery and order your goodies in advance. And receive a 15% discount. Angelina's Bakery is located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard in Seaside, across from Craig and Auto Parts. We'll see you at Angelina's.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Peter B. Collins Show, live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. We'll be here again tomorrow, and part of the show on Wednesday will originate from Washington, and then I have to catch a flight. And so you're going to hear some of the interviews that we have collected here with people who couldn't join us live, including Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Chicago. I was very impressed with her. And a number of other people who we'll bring on to the program on Wednesday. Joining me now is Jay Harris. He's the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine and one of our co-conspirators here at the Take Back America Conference. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Doing fine. Are you interviewed out?
I am just about interviewed out, man.
Well, then let's just talk about you.
Oh, well.
How'd you get this gig as the head of Mother Jones? One of my favorite publications, I believe. I was a charter subscriber.
It is a great gig, but I've been here so long I've forgotten how I got here.
Yeah.
I was at Newsweek International for 9 years. I went to there after business school. I had always subscribed to Mother Jones Magazine. And kind of one of these karmic things happened where a friend of mine in New York called me out of the blue one day and said, Mother Jones is looking for a publisher. And
wow.
It just sort of clicked. I thought that sounds interesting.
And did you preside over the brief Michael Moore era?
I did not.
That was before you.
Michael Moore was actually long gone before I got there. Although I heard stories.
Yeah. Well, he did some interesting things. They weren't all successful, but he came in and tried to do a little more of a workers...
working class
focus.
Thing. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Ben Hamper, the rivet head on the cover of Mother Jones. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And then Jeffrey Klein. presided for many years as editor, and I was very impressed with his work.
Jeffrey Klein is a tenacious investigator, and we did some fabulous investigations during this period. I think some of the best in Mother Jones' whole tenure, including, of course, grabbing Newt Gingrich by the throat and not letting go.
Right. Also, some of the early reporting on George W. Bush and some of his escapades came to light in Mother Jones magazine.
That's
right. I remember
right.
Steve Pizzo broke a number of stories related to W., some of which only saw light of day in Mother Jones and should have gotten much wider circulation.
Well, the big piece that Pizzo did for us was back at in the fall of 1992, September of 1992. You can find it on the website, motherjones.com. Pizzo actually wrote for Doug Foster, who was the editor preceding Jeffrey Klein. And he did this great cover piece called My Three Sons, which profiled Neil, Jeb, and George W.
Yeah.
And their escapades. And, if you read that article with any seriousness, you'd never elect any of them to public office.
Well, and it's where some of the original reporting about Bush's uneven stewardship of Harkin Energy and the other companies that Daddy and his friends either put him in charge of or bailed him out from, that really came out of Mother Jones. And Pizzo, I believe, got Paul Krugman to pick up some threads of those stories during the 2000 campaign.
I don't know how Krugman got those threads, but certainly those were things that Krugman harked on and was frankly well ahead of the media pack on those issues.
Yeah. Jay Harris with us, the publisher of Mother Jones magazine, and your mission statement is?
Mother Jones' mission is to do revelatory reporting that in its power and reach inspires a more just and democratic society. It's very, I believe it to this day that is what we can do with the power of great reporting. We inform and inspire a more just and democratic society.
Well, and you do it in a way that I believe is not preachy, screechy, or whiny. You really come across, I think, as stalwart supporters of the rights that and the responsibilities that we think of as real Americans.
Well, you know, Mother Jones has always had these two traditions. One is the progressive political tradition. The other is the investigative reporting, muckraking tradition.
Yeah.
And at a certain point in our history, I think there was a tension between those two things. If you let ideology drive your reporting, it undermines the credibility of the reporting. And we felt like the stuff we were doing was so important, we didn't want to ghettoize it just to true believers. So we're still true to progressive values. I think it's really with those filters that we decide what stories are important to cover.
Mm-hmm.
But when we do it with really solid journalism.
Yeah.
And I think, frankly, that's behind in part of the run-up in our circulation. I mean, people from across the political spectrum can trust what they read in Mother Jones.
One of the most impressive recent issues was the one that was themed around oceans. And I thought that was fascinating because it had kind of a National Geographic orientation to it, where you could kind of follow your sense of curiosity about nature and the vastness of the oceans and all that. But as you got deeper, it led us into various issues about the environment, about climate change. And again, it was done in a manner that's very informative, but doesn't come across as a screed.
Well, thank you for saying that. I really admire the writer who put that the lead piece together.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Julia Whitty. She's done a number of pieces for Mother Jones, but before she became a writer, she was a film producer and did a lot of nature films. Did a lot for the National Geographic Society.
Oh.
In fact,
she
is excruciatingly faithful to the science. And the comment that I got again and again and again as I was helping to promote this piece was comments from scientists to say she nailed it. She's got it right. And I think, you know, one of the things that so freaks me out about the Bush administration is their denial of science. You know, if we can't trust the facts, if we can't hew to the truth, wherever it may lead, progressive or conservative, what do we have? We don't have anything. It's all spin. And so that's why I like being a Mother Jones, is that we're about bringing out the facts.
Are you dissing intelligent design? in that statement?
Well, no, I actually think that if we spend any time at all talking about evolution, that we ought to spend an equal amount of time talking about intelligent design.
Because and so you don't cover evolution at all. Is that what you're telling us?
Well, no, all I'm saying is that the biggest single argument of against intelligent design is found right there in the White House.
Right. Hey, and that judge, his name is Jones. I can't remember his first name, but he's the judge in Pennsylvania who ruled on the case involving intelligent design in the school district there,
right.
And he really nailed that.
Yeah.
He described it in unequivocal terms that this is hokum, this is not science, this is religion being presented in a scientific veneer.
You know, apropos of Mr. Jones, Judge Jones, mm-hmm. I guess I should say, I mean, one of the greatest connections I've made in the last couple of years at Mother Jones was with a lifelong conservative named Clyde Prestowitz. Prestowitz was in the Reagan administration. He was in the Commerce Department for 5 years, big international trade guy. This guy was born an evangelical Christian. He was raised at his father's knee. He basically said he'd vote for a dead horse if it was Republican. And he wrote a book a couple years ago called Rogue Nation, American mm-hmm. Unilateralism and the Failure of Good Intentions. And you know, in that you see that the principles that I have found so important to me in my own life and political orientation are really shared across the political spectrum. I mean, don't tell anybody.
It's just you, me, and Connie Chung, Jay. Go ahead.
Don't tell anybody, but I was raised in this really conservative town. I grew up in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. It's 80% Republican.
Glad you got out.
I was not raised to be a flaming liberal.
Huh.
You know, my crime, I think, was paying attention during civics class.
You bought that good government stuff?
Yeah. All men are created equal. Okay?
Uh-huh.
You know, okay, what's unclear about that?
Yeah. Well, tell me about this. We're here at the Take Back America conference. My colleague Tom Hartman is live on Air America. The Young Turks are here. They're live on satellite radio right now. And there are a few other folks who represent progressive media electronic version right here on this row. We're also glad to have lots of people from great print publications like yours, The Nation, The Progressive. Virtually everyone's here. The problem I see is
that... Oh, my God, who's looking out for the rest of the country?
Yeah, we're talking to ourselves and our friends. And just to take radio as the example, when I was on in San Francisco 15 years ago, I followed Rush Limbaugh. And they thought that was good. I was some sort of balance. I never bulked up to actually, you know, physically offset his weight. But it was a very interesting situation to follow him every day, to be able to talk back to the ditto heads, and to try to persuade them that, hey, you know, maybe Rush doesn't have it all right, and maybe there's another way and other approaches that can be taken. And we've lost that kind of discourse. Rush Limbaugh only appears on stations that have an all right-wing lineup. And Al Franken only appears on stations that have an all left-wing lineup.
Yeah.
And when we look at the audience research, there is very little crossover. There are a few right-wingers who listen to me, email, and call. But I know that virtually all of my listeners generally agree with me. And frankly, I don't think that's totally healthy.
Frankly, I think it is pretty unhealthy.
Yeah.
I was at a meeting this weekend where I was talking to a fellow who works on Capitol Hill for the ACLU, who was telling me that things are so polarized on the Hill that oftentimes he is put in the position of being the go-between Democratic and Republican senators, where he'll be talking to a Republican, and they'll say, well, that's very interesting. Would you please send this message over to my colleague in the same committee?
Uh-huh.
Right? So there is, and I don't think the American people like this polarized environment. So I don't know what we in the media can do to try to bridge that chasm, but I think it's really important to try to do.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break. And if you'd like to talk with Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones, he's with us for another 15 minutes, and this is his 19th interview today. So see if you can come up with a question that'll stump him. Our lines are open for you right now at 831-899-5792. Ask him how we can take back America. 888-579-2540. We'll continue in just a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
We're not all bad. We put our features where they had to go.
Doesn't your Volvo deserve to be maintained and repaired by the best? Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I'll bring you personalities and interesting topics from the world of food, wine, and travel. Guests on the Tasty Planet have included wine experts, restaurateurs, famous chefs, and others that have made the Monterey Bay region such a delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored by the Monterey Salinas Transit's Grapevine Express. The Grapevine Express runs weekends from the Aquarium to Carmel Valley. For more information, call toll-free 888-678-2781 or visit the web at mst.org.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
It's 5:47 here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Let's check in with Metro Diane for the last traffic of the day. Yes. Go ahead, Diane.
All right. It's actually not looking too bad this time of the evening here. Soledad southbound 101 on the Front Street off-ramp. We have a two-vehicle accident. Actually, both vehicles have been moved out of the roadway onto the right-hand shoulder, so CHP en route for that. Santa Cruz Mounts, both directions of Highway 17, checking in, solid accident-free. And some roadworks to be aware of in Salinas, Davis Road between Westridge Parkway and Auto Center Circle. There's maintenance work going on in the area as crews resurface the roadway, so the southbound lanes are closed with traffic detour to one northbound lane. This report is brought to you by Centrum. When it comes to multivitamins, it's not just the number of ingredients, but how they interact that counts. Centrum balances combinations of nutrients to bring out their full potential. Centrum is balanced and complete. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 48 minutes past the hour, as we originate from Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway, at the Take Back America Conference. My guest right now, Jay Harris, the publisher of Mother Jones Magazine, based in San Francisco. What's the circulation now at Mother Jones?
Just over 240,000 paid circulation.
And has the Bush administration been good for circulation of progressive publications? I know the Nation has had a spike in circulation.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a big run-up in the last few years. It began before the Bush administration, so I'd like to think that it's actually partly due to the quality of the magazine.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I think when as Victor Navasky of The Nation says, what's bad for the country is good for the nation.
It works for him.
Yeah. I don't know what the equivalent for Mother Jones is, but anyway, we're in there, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that you do focus on is investigative reporting, and you actually have a separate fund set up. Is that correct?
That's right. We have the Fund for Investigative Reporting. Mother Jones is set up under a nonprofit.
The Foundation for National Progress.
Foundation for National Progress.
They own this laptop computer here.
I'm glad to see you're using it. There you go.
The Foundation for National Progress, I mean, Mother Jones was set up years ago as a nonprofit because the founders, in their wisdom, recognized that political magazines in America always lose money. And so what we've done is we develop our circulation revenues, we develop our advertising revenues, but we always have been able to stay independent and able to fund investigative reporting where we can send pump somebody out for a few weeks on the road to dig into a story mm-hmm. because of this investigative fund. And it's really, I think, been a very important means of keeping Mother Jones independent and strong.
And you're actually beefing up your investigative reporting.
We are. We are creating the I-team, the investigative team.
To get to the bottom of the Natalie Holloway case?
Well, they've asked to go on long-term assignment to Aruba.
Uh-huh.
And so we're thinking about that. But
I've been there. It's mainly windsurfing.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. co-eds, right?
Yeah.
James Ridgway, the legendary reporter from The Village Voice,
right.
Who got laid off and when The Voice closed their Washington office, is now our Washington, D.C. bureau chief.
Mm-hmm. But there aren't any stories here, Jay.
Well, not if the Bush administration can help it. They're going to keep the secrecy clamps down so that nothing will come out. But
right.
we think we can penetrate that.
Yeah. And what else are you doing to work on that aspect of your coverage?
Well, we brought in two new investigative fellows. Monica Bauerlein has been made our new investigative editor based in San Francisco. We have a team of both interns and fellows who will be working under her direction to try to beef up our reporting in that. And then we've, as has been the case over a long period of time, we work with some of the best freelancers in the business, folks who really know their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Dreyfus on national security issues, for instance, is just a first-rate reporter, and we'll continue to feature him on our pages.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you'd like some phone calls, right?
I would love some phone calls. I was in Eureka last summer, and I would love to hear from somebody in Eureka. Santa Cruz is one of my all-time favorite places. I want to hear from people who have questions.
All right, make Jay Harris's day. We've got room for a couple of calls here. 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast. He loves Santa Cruz. And Eureka, he's waiting to hear from you. He's been there at least once, and you're dying to go back, right?
I am dying to go back.
Hug a few redwoods. 888-579-2540, toll free. That's 888-579-2540.
And I'm not dissing Sacramento or Phoenix either. I want to hear from them.
Okay. They can call in, too. Now, we have this focus here of taking back America, and that is a worthy goal. Senator Gravel was in your seat just before you joined us, and he said he loves the energy, he loves the concept, but that it's being driven in a fairly narrow way toward the interests of the Democratic Party. And he is on a bender promoting direct democracy, not at the exclusion of the representative system, but in addition to it and as a way of breaking through some of the deadlocks. And I'm just curious, as you look at the landscape, where are the promising soft points in breaking the neocons' lock on our government, ending one-party rule, and trying to reestablish, you know, basic notions of fair play and justice in this country with maybe a little less invasion of privacy?
Great question. I mean, I do think that the most obvious soft point for breaking this deadlock lives in the current administration. I mean, it's not so much the bold vision that Democrats or progressives have put out, but the just abject failures of the current administration that I think are so telling.
And are we going to have to wait for principled Republicans to stand up and say, I've had enough?
I think we need more principled folks in both parties who recognize the principles upon which this country were founding to stand up and reassert the authority of the congressional branch in Congress. I think we have to have folks who are willing to talk about the public's right to know, about opening up secrecy in government. I think there's so many areas where if you want to have, you know, direct democracy doesn't work if you keep the people in the dark, right? I believe in the possibilities of democracy, but that depends upon an informed an educated public who knows what to do with that information. And we are going absolutely the wrong direction. We have to have somebody, leaders of both parties, of all parties, who are willing to stand up for substantive public education in this country, accessible to all. You know, there's some real basic things here that don't seem particularly left or right, that seem to me bedrock.
And if we return the Democrats to power, will that do it? Or will it take more?
Well, I think if we return, I think returning at least one House of Congress to the Democrats would be a step in the right direction. I think that breaking the link between big money and political campaigns is crucial. Public financing of elections in this country is absolutely fundamental to having the people reclaim their government.
Jay, you're very powerful. We have callers on the line. We go to Eureka for Don. Hello, Don. Say hello to Jay Harris.
Hi, Peter B. and Jay. The thing that I'm really interested in, actually, is Michael Moore, and has all the management been cleared out of Mother Jones that got rid of him?
Have you purged the whole Michael Moore era?
Huh?
Well, Michael preceded me by some years. He was gone, I think, by late 1987, and I didn't get there till 1991. I did not engage in any purges whatsoever. I think the place where Michael and I have a lot of common ground is that this is a man who, clearly is willing to risk the wrath of the powers that be to find a good story, and I like to think that we're sticking true to that.
All right, Don, anything else?
Yeah, what I wanted to know is, is anybody left in Mother Jones' management that was a part of the coup, so to speak, against Mike?
There are people on the board who were there at the same time as Michael, but nobody is in the Mother Jones management from the same era.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Now to Bill in Eureka. Hello, Bill. You're very popular in Eureka, Jay.
Excellent. It was that clarion call.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
He did ask for it, I suppose.
Yes, he did. He's getting it.
So I wanted to return maybe to a topic that you guys started to discuss earlier today, this preaching to the choir type of thing.
Right.
And what would be a few fundamental steps to maybe not just be trumping our own horns, but, you know, getting the message out more securely?
Well, in the terms of talk radio, one of the issues is that the companies who control the industry have grown comfortable with these kind of left-wing, right-wing stations, and they've figured out how to make money with them. But I don't think that it's necessarily best for our country and for the discussion of public issues.
Fair enough. I mean, that seems reasonable, from your end, but from a publisher's end?
Okay. He's asking about what we discussed earlier, that the publications and broadcasts have become very partisan and ghettoized, and he wants to know what print can do about that.
Well, let me speak from the perspective of Mother Jones. I mean, one of the things that we've tried to do is really be a reporting magazine as opposed to an opinion magazine. And I think that I don't think there'll be any confusion. If you go to the pages of Mother Jones, you'll understand that this is fundamentally a progressive in orientation. But the stories that you'll do will be stories about real people that'll reflect multiple sides of a story, if there are multiple sides.
You don't adhere to political correctness. I'm still a little steamed over Mark Hertzgaard dissing the Ohio stolen vote in 2004, but
right.
It was good journalism.
We send out journalists to report the story and let the chips fall where they may. One of my favorite experiences on talk radio has been going on to conservative talk radio shows and having conservative caller saying, do you go after the Democrats with the same vigor? And I say, yes, we do.
Bill, thank you for the call. Jay Harris, thanks for joining us here tonight. And best wishes to all of you at Mother Jones.
Thanks. Great to be here.
All right. We'll be back here tomorrow, live from Washington, D.C. Join me same time, same station here for the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for listening.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly! Oh, oh, oh.
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540. Down in
Tom Hartman.
And over the last 3 days, the new conservative talking points that have been going out are blame it on Bill Clinton.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
The high gas prices, we got to shift the blame to the Democrats, say it's all because he didn't let them drill in Anwar. The real reason is because for almost 20 years now, the Republicans have prevented him from raising CAFE standards, the corporate average fuel efficiency standards. Average fuel efficiency of a car right now is back where it was in the 70s.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Florida Emergency Management Director Craig Fugate says people in the hurricane warning area should leave now.
If you're waiting till tomorrow, you won't have that option. You have to go tonight.
Tropical storm Alberto, approaching hurricane strength with maximum sustained winds of 70 miles per hour, is centered about 130 miles southwest of Cedar Key, the expected site of landfall. CBS meteorologist Brian Norcross is worried about storm surge.
Because of the way the sea bottom is there in the Gulf, is the most vulnerable spot in the United States to having high water come ashore because there's a very shallow shelf there. So that water could pile up 10 or 12 feet when the storm comes ashore early tomorrow.
The storm's already brought torrential rain. It caused road flooding in some areas, but many Floridians don't mind after a prolonged drought that created conditions for the recent rash of wildfires. President Bush and his top national security advisors gathered at Camp David today for a strategy session on Iraq. At the end of day one, reporters asked about al-Qaeda's announcement of a replacement for Abu Musab al-Zarqawi.
The successor to Zarqawi is going to be on our list to bring to justice.
CBS News correspondent Elizabeth Palmer has more from Baghdad.
His name is Abu Hamza al-Muhajir. It's clearly nom de guerre. It's an alias. Al-Muhajir means the immigrant in Arabic, which suggests to some intelligence analysts that he is a non-Iraqi.
U.S. forces have been acting on the intelligence gathered after Zarqawi's death. In the past 2 days, officials say they've staged 140 major operations, killing 32 insurgents and capturing one described as a high-value target. Police in Reno have identified a man named Darren Roy Mack as a person of interest in the shooting of a family court judge this morning. Judge Chuck Weller was seriously wounded as he stood near a window in his chambers. The shot came from outside. Mack is a suspect in a homicide at an apartment building across town. Investigators say he had dealings with Judge Wells and the family court during a recent divorce case. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports on new findings that if you've had too much to drink, coffee might do more than wake you up.
You can sober up with coffee and help your liver, too. A study in the Archives of Internal Medicine finds coffee can reduce a drinker's risk of developing